You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Could you shut up for 5 minutes? Like, I can't even get through the intro without you bitching. Jeez. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I think this is episode 347. It's recorded on March 19th, Harry's last day, because he's irritating me, 2019. We're going to talk about what happened in New Zealand. We're going to talk, mainly we're going to talk about what is 4chan, what is the online trolling right. We have a man whose license plate says 4chan on it. So James Neese is here, and I'm in a book. I've been immortalized in a book, so you'll hear all about that coming up in just a second.
Warning, this show is for adults, produced by semi-adults. So the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians, where our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective while treating modern politics with all of the irreverence it deserves.
There has been lie after lie.
We toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, a 15-year veteran of politics and media, Chris Spangle.
I figured if I make James put his headphones on, then he'll stop talking through the intro. I turned his mic off, Harry. How are you?
Going good. Or did you turn my mic off?
I did not turn your mic off. I did, because I thought it was you at first. It was just this low mumbling.
You just assumed you heard low mumble.
Well,
it was me.
Low mumbling is usually your department on this show. But James Neese joins us. He's downing his 18th double shot energy from Starbucks. Mm-hmm. He's got his Dorals in the table. Dorals, cigarettes. Mittens is over there trying to bum one, already corrupting the youth of We Are Libertarians. James hasn't been on in a very long time. It's always good to see you. It's quite the process. The only person I'd say it takes more effort to get you on the show. Mm-hmm. Only Greg may be a harder get at this point. And Miranda, I have to remind for days and days, just like you. Mm-hmm. You work with Harry now, so mm-hmm. I've been pinging Harry for days, bugging Harry to remind you, and I just sent you a last minute text this morning, and I said, if you do not bring James Neese, we do not have a show tonight.
First of all, I don't know why you think I'm responsible for him not being there.
Because you are at least in, listen, he is not responsible for himself at this point. He's too much of a shit poster. He spends all day shit posting your coworkers, his kids, mm-hmm. I assume, and society at large.
That's about right.
The chicks on the right.
Yeah.
he doesn't have time to remember his schedule because he doesn't live on human time. He lives on 4chan time.
Correct. Yes.
Right, James?
Well, no. I like to think I'm Iron Will, right? So when people are just like, how are you up at 4 o'clock in the morning? Or how are you like doing this weird shit at like 7 o'clock in the morning, like 3 o'clock at night? It's like, listen, I spent all my college years playing World of Warcraft. So, you know, these like 18-hour, 20-hour, like 30-hour, like grind sessions I'm doing.
Stuff, right.
Like that's natural to me. That's like the...
You just were born into it, yeah.
Yeah, like I was... God, how was that? I got my computer when I was 13, and like as soon as I got the computer when I was 13, it was literally like 20 hours of Diablo 2. So I was like, clicking it through. See, I would have been normal, right? I would have been normal. I would have probably just did normal things if my dad was like, here you go, boy. Got you net zero, too, so you can get on the internet. Dude, like, as soon as I had the internet, I swear, within, like, the first, like, 48 hours, I'm playing video games. I'm looking up big old anime titties, dude. Like, I'm just wrecking it. And see, back then, it was in the living room. So my dad, but he has bad vision. He's like, what are you looking at? I'm like, just some cartoons.
Now, if recent events have transpired and you hear just in the first 5 minutes here why James Neese is on, because he's in the news. I don't know, Harry, did you notice that when the geese started making a noise outside, both Mittens and I turned our gaze towards the door?
Yeah, and you ran towards the open door.
We have the DST set up here on We Are Libertarians, so if you watch on YouTube, because every episode we're on YouTube, so you can go and watch that if you're not an audiophile, you want to see our beautiful faces. But got the windows open, and it's very springy in here. We're celebrating daylight savings time. We're celebrating it being 8:04 and still light outside.
Mm-hmm. Last full day of winter.
Last full day of winter. I don't know about you guys, but I have had enough. I am so full of cabin fever, and I'm just ready to be outside, and so is Mittens. How about you, huh?
I'm upset. I only really got to fully use my Subaru a couple of times this winter.
Yeah, we didn't really have a very strong winter. It was fairly mild.
Yeah, it was very mild, just cold, not a lot of snow this time. I saw a couple of friends in Wisconsin and, you know, up north. They had all this snow. Jealous.
Right.
I didn't have any. And if it was very, you know, very small. I think the only time I really got to really like get to use the full power of the Subaru was the one day that our mayor forgot it was going to snow. Yeah. And
literally said that in a re-election year. Oh, I forgot that it was going to snow.
Yeah. So the plow trucks ran out. So like everyone else was panicking.
And explain why you're saying that about your Subaru, because it's 87 years old.
First off, it's not 87
steam
years old.
Steam powered.
It is a
snow tires.
The most expensive thing on the car are the snow tires. But it is one of those. It's a classic 1993 Subaru Legacy Estate.
Right. Okay. It's quite the estate.
Yeah, it's an estate.
If that's all you leave in your estate, you're going to have real pissed off relatives.
Yeah, it's an amazing. So it's a 26-year-old station wagon, which I love. I can park it anywhere I want. I leave the doors unlocked. I don't worry about anyone stealing anything on the car. You know, it's amazing. I love it. I think everyone, even if you have a brand new car, if you have a spare $800, I recommend going out and buying a hoopty. You will drive your hoopty more than your nice car because it's just, you know, you don't care. You just pick up your, just take your hoopty. And if it breaks down, who cares? Leave your hoopty, you know, get an Uber home, sell it, move on.
Do you drive a nice car, James? What do you drive?
The Hyundai.
Yeah, but how old?
It's about 4 years old.
All right. Okay. So you have a nice car. You used to have one of the greatest cars of all time.
The beater.
Well, it was the Mercedes, right? Mm-hmm. It was a what? How old was the Mercedes?
It was like a 92, 93 E-Class. So it was the one you saw, like the same model that you'd see in like a Tupac video.
Or Saddam Hussein driving around in. Yeah.
So it's like, oh shit, like I got to get this. You know, I'm stunting around like small town Indiana and this like, you know, big ass Mercedes, like boom, boom, you know, turning the back seat. It's got like a 7-disc CD changer in the back of the trunk.
Right.
So I'm going through town like boom, boom, boom. You know, it's like, hey, what up? You know, check out my Mercedes. And I guess that's a $400 Mercedes, dude. I'm like, well, shit.
Yeah.
It's like, well, just look at it. Like, all I needed to do was just cruise with the windows down, pump through town, like the middle of town, just kind of cruising through here, bumping like, you know, California Love or something like that. I'm like, yo, dude, it's just like I'm in the 90s right now. Just like I'm in the 90s.
And didn't you wreck it like the day after coming on the show?
No, my sister did.
Well, did you I assume she paid for it, right?
So no.
$500.
See, family don't do that. That's right. See, like, friends will feel bad about it. Strangers will feel bad about it. Family's like, oh, you get your taxes in 2 months. You're okay.
No, man.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Because remember when Brett got that truck?
Yes. He
dredging up bolt stuff.
Well, he borrowed Boss Hogg's truck and he got bitnered.
Yep.
And Brett borrowed Jeremiah Morrill's truck. And wrecked it, and then didn't fix it
right
for like months.
Then got a new car, They got himself a new car. That right. was the best part.
Right. He bought himself a new car before he fixed Jeremiah's.
Classic Bittner.
So listen, I have been honored. And now, being Dear Leader, now those of you who are new to the program, the running joke is that I am Dear Leader because we are libertarians. While there's like 40 people involved at this point, I rule with an iron fist. And I've had to fire people. When I had to fire Chris Galt, I said, "Listen, everybody, I'm Dear Leader around here. I will fire you. Only Harry really tries to dispute my power. But then when he gets the opportunity to coup, like he did 2 weeks ago, he only took over Twitch and the Discord, which are the two things he already has control over."
Full power.
Right. He didn't even manage to get close to the thing that the RSS feed. But
I can't make new channels or rename channels on Discord, so I keep trying to add shit for memes.
there's a reason why.
See, the Discord, while Discord, still we have normies in it, so we can't let you go full knees.
Well, they can't get into the access. Like, so most players, most users in the Discord are like popping off in the new chat channel, and I'm like, "Yo, dude, check out this shit in the hentai haven, dude." Or like, this woman's posting nudes over here, like 3D titties, and they're like confused because they can't see those channels.
yeah, there's a reason why I don't let people see those channels.
So I have been honored by it's Derocrates, Derocrates, and so I get this email. "Hey, I wrote a book about the intellectual dark web. I included you in it, but you die." So I'm in this with Ben Shapiro, Chris Spangle Show, Data and Society Podcast, Ezra Klein, Jordan Peterson, Joe Rogan, Live from America Podcast, Rubin Report, and Rebel Wisdom, and then a few other people. And so it's like, it's a 330-page book, and it's sort of written as a philosophy major, James. I will hand this over to you in a moment, but it's written sort of like an ancient Greek text. It's sort of written in the same way that, you know, Apology by Plato was written. Now, I am in this book, and on page 154,
mm-hmm.
So I got the book today, actually. Okay. And I basically he quotes a lot of the Chris Spangle Show episodes that I did on free speech. He actually lifts a lot of our direct statements and takes a lot of my better statements about free speech and why it's important and like turns it into a Galt like speech. And then I get decapitated.
Did he include the one episode where we talked about Hank Hill and like methamphetamine?
No, he didn't get to that one. I basically die as a martyr in a coliseum of people where full of Trump supporters who kill me over free speech. I die as a martyr for free speech and memes. And I've never been more honored than this. And the next title, the next chapter is titled "People Are Stupid." So here's how I die. "Chris, the emboldened words pierce the heart of his naive faith in the American people. He draws his last breath for his dying speech. I trust the American people to make the right decision." Oliver dismounts, stands over Chris, life draining from his body. "The right decision." Raises his V6 sword and decapitates Chris, slicing through his neck as he speaks the word, "They voted for Trump." And that's how I die. Now, nice. I die, but I get two resurrections in this.
Nice.
Two resurrections, which is quite the accomplishment. Jordan Peterson goes on to honor me and gives speeches about this is so funny to me because it's so true. What happens?
to wait, so was that Rob that sliced your head off?
No, it's Oliver Darcy.
Oh, okay,
right, Oliver sorry. Darcy of right. CNN decapitates me.
Really hoping it was
Rob. So let's see. Where it's not here. It is. I think it's on 174. My first resurrection. This is what I rise from the grave to say. "It is amazing to me how many of these people think that they know what you should consume as a listener or viewer." And then I go on to promote my own podcast.
Classics. Classic Spangler.
Both times I am resurrected in this book, I am self-promoting. So honestly, life mirrors fiction. You can take a look at it if you want.
That's one more resurrection than Jesus, right?
Honestly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and, talk about giving me a Messiah complex. I didn't need any more of that in my life. But I do thank him for sending the book. That is very entertaining, and it's a very interesting book. So we want to thank him for sending that in. Now it's time to thank a few people, thank our patrons, all of our patrons who actually make this thing move. I want to thank the Libertarian Coalition. They are starting a webcast, which you can find by going to their Facebook page, and they had me as a guest. I don't know if it's out yet, but thanks to Donald and everybody over at the Libertarian Coalition, what they're trying to do over there is unite the clans of the libertarian movement. So a tall task ahead of them, so go like their page, as well as Memerty Libs. Go like their page. They're both $100 a month sponsors, as are Jason Doolittle, who sent me a slingshot. So did Samantha from the group. She sent me another slingshot. So I'm well stocked after mine broke. Intern Ed Brehab, he's a $100 a month subscriber. Christy Avery and Craig DaCosta, thanks to them for supporting the program. So let's jump into it. And welcome back. I'm just looking. Paul Jonathan Eads Jr., welcome back at the $25 level. So obviously there was a huge tragedy in New Zealand. I think it's 50 is the count at this point. 50 Muslims were killed in a mosque.
Yes.
And I have not actually seen the shooter's name. Here is something that I like, that I'm a huge fan of. I haven't seen the shooter's name. I haven't even seen his picture. He's been blurred out. I have not gone and done a huge deep dive on this particular, like all the particulars of it, just because it's like, I don't know, it's depressing and you sort of get the vibe.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not seeing his name as much. And that's something that we've always talked about. Don't give these guys attention. Don't show their name. Starve that of attention. And Malcolm Gladwell, he wrote a great article, and he's given a couple talks, which you can find on YouTube, about why school shootings happen, why mass shootings happen, and sort of the spread of them. It comes from, you know, they like build on each other, where these guys see one and they study it, and then they almost become kind of like cult heroes. Mm-hmm. And so starving them of attention is really a great thing to do, because if you really there isn't much news value in knowing the name of the person that committed this crime,
right,
this act of evil. Like, there just isn't. And so I'm glad for that. But this one is different in a couple ways. You know, everybody rushes to the same old cliche stuff. We got to ban guns.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you would think that Donald Trump flew to New Zealand and personally executed 50 people. Like, if you watch some of the blue check marks on Twitter, we've talked about mass shootings at several points in the past and how to solve them. So I don't want to necessarily reiterate some of that. You can go back into the archives and listen to some of that. But, you know, I personally, and I'll let you guys weigh in, I think the difference with this story, it's not about guns. It's not about any of that. Like, New Zealand has some of the more draconian gun laws in the world. But what makes this one different is the way that the shooter used the internet to almost boost the signal of what he was trying to do. And he succeeded in it. Like, he planted things in his manifesto that the media just bought hook, line, and sinker. For instance, who was your main influence? And he answered Candace Owens.
Right.
And a white supremacist was not inspired to go kill people by Candace Owens. The white supremacist was trying to get the media to blame Candace Owens because she's black.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to abuse Candace Owens in the media because he hates black people. He hates people of color. So, and the media didn't have that nuance. They didn't understand that nuance because they don't fundamentally kind of understand what's going on. And I'm gonna play something from The Daily, from the New York Times, and their tech person. I didn't catch this guy's name, and it doesn't say it here, but let me see if they, you know, you'd think that they would, Kevin Roos, who writes for technology for the New York Times. But I wanted to have James on because James and Harry understand this world a lot better than a lot of other people. What he did is it was a media creation. I mean, what he did is he committed this act of evil in a way that was more public than ever before. If you're not really up to speed, this young white male in New Zealand, basically, I don't know his motives. We'll probably dive into it. I know James actually read the manifesto, and having glazed over that, I don't know that you can really take a lot of that at face value, because he both is a raging leftist who loves China and a white nationalist, you know, who loves conservative leaning things. So, but in the media, the narrative has mostly been that he's a white nationalist, right leaning. He starts watching Paul Joseph Watson, and then that leads him to Alex Jones, which leads him to, well, you'll hear basically the analysis from the New York Times. And so I wanted to have on James, and, you know, Harry's always here, but James specifically, because James, you're very tied into 4chan, are you not?
Moderated, was a janitor that went to moderator for B back before B was just a porn dump. Yeah.
Right. So you, and like what year?
Early 2000s. So okay. 2002, 2003, 2004.
So you've been on 4chan long before any of us ever even knew what it was. Mm-hmm. And so you've kind of seen the evolution of it, and you've lived in that culture for a very long time. And so I want to give people an idea of what quote unquote far right media is. So you don't have to necessarily go take a look at it, but you actually can understand it and be a consumer of news in a responsible way. But first, I think we need to set the table of how the media is talking about this particular event and what's causing all these mass shootings. And I think this conversation really details it better than else. Now, I generally like The Daily from the New York Times, and I didn't find this to be all that offensive or terribly wrong, but I think we'll kind of, you know, wave your hand if you want to stop, and we'll annotate it a little bit, because it just sort of misses the nuance of a lot of things. So this is sort of the mainstream narrative.
Kevin, I want to talk to you about the moments before this mass shooting began. What do you know about those?
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Well, what we know comes from a video that was live streamed on Facebook while this was all happening by the gunman. He taped himself in the car on his way over to the mosque, listening to music, talking. And right before he gets out of the car and goes into the mosque, he pauses and says, "Remember, lads, subscribe to PewDiePie." And when I heard that, I just, like, I knew, oh, this is something different than we're used to.
What do you mean? What is PewDiePie? And why does that reference matter?
So PewDiePie is this really popular YouTube personality. He has the most subscribers of anyone on YouTube. Some people think he's offensive. Some people really like
PewDiePie has been getting, I think people think he's a gateway drug. He has been caught saying a few things that are, you know, he's been caught saying the N-word or a couple racially tinged things. I don't consume his content. Is he overall an offensive character? He's the number one subscribed channel on YouTube. He basically just plays video games and commentates on them, right?
Well, he gets infused with T-Series.
Right, which is this Indian film studio he's competing against. They'll talk a little bit about that. But, like, is PewDiePie a gateway to white nationalism?
No. Anybody that's got, like, that amount of subscribers. So let's just look at some big ones, right?
I can go from PewDiePie to Soda Poppin' to Asmongold. I can go down the list of all Twitch streamers. I have about like 50,000 people, 60,000 people. When you get these large, massive amounts of audience, it becomes a shit show. Because you have hundreds of people on a chat channel trying to outdo each other to say the most offensive thing, to get the most attention, because you want the attention of the streamer. You want him to call you out, ban you, or be like, you know, what the fuck are you saying?
Right. Trolling culture is about outdoing the other person to a level like I'm going to say the thing that you're too afraid to say to show you I'm more alpha than you.
Yeah. So if I were to say, is it a gateway drug? I will say that the people that will be on PewDiePie's channel, that will be on Asmongold's channel, any of these big streamers, Twitch streamers, YouTube streamers that are saying anything racial, anything sexist, they're already saying that on other websites as well. I can go to 4chan and see that. I can go to 8chan and see that. I can go on Facebook and see that. They're in Facebook lockdown groups. It's not like he's a gateway. It's just another platform for them to use.
Right.
So if I go into Twitch and I say ridiculous shit all the time, I do it in video games as well. It's a toxic culture that's kind of fun to do sometimes, where it's because, you know, you're anonymous. And once you're anonymous on the internet, you can kind of say and do what you want to do, kind of out edge each other. So I wouldn't say it's a gateway drug or like to, you know, white supremacy. I just say it's just a large media platform where I can be as offensive as I possibly can because I know he's not going to catch it in time. So,
and what we talked about in that last episode is the scale of the internet. I mean, Harry, when you are scaling something up, like running big media brands myself, like the larger your audience gets, and we've seen this with We Are Libertarians, you know, we're up to like 93,000, 94,000 likes on Facebook. As the pool expands, it stops being your core group of people who get what you're trying to do. And then it expands out into people who are trying to get attention or who are not getting what you're about, or it just scale brings a complication and a muddiness to the core product of whatever you may be trying to put out. I mean, and we saw that like with Twitter, when you're talking about only America being 25% of their business, that's a huge, hard scale for them to moderate what goes on these platforms.
Yeah, correct. Especially when you start understanding like the scope of just like, you know, the human race, because what is there, 7 billion humans on the planet Earth,
and right,
at least a third of them have internet access and going around, and the other
It was like three quarters of the Earth.
Yeah, a third
like
of them.
80% of Americans have a smartphone.
Yeah, and the other third is getting ready to come online, so it's just going to get bigger. So you cast this massive net, and libertarians should understand, like, because you see it as the bigger the Libertarian Party gets and start casting this wider net, you start getting other people that you do not intend to get, but they get brought in and get come. You basically underneath the radar, like, okay, I don't know about their racist leanings because, you know, the net is just so large because of, you know, how everything is going.
Yeah. And for all the talk about how we embrace diversity, other cultures don't necessarily mesh well, and they don't know what, like, I don't know what may be offensive. We all have heard, like, the okay sign. Now it means white supremacist. But, like, if you gave an okay sign in India, it meant F you or something. Like, we all heard that as kids. And so once you have the earth surrounding somebody like PewDiePie, and you've got teenagers who don't know any better from all kinds of different backgrounds, like, it's just a kind of a recipe for this kind of nonsense.
To be honest, we should all just be happy that PewDiePie isn't an American, or he'd run for president. You know,
right?
Yes. I mean, it's also funny because it's people that are too invested into politics that basically become prey to this, like really easy prey. You know, if I'm an internet troll, I'm immoral, I'm amoral, I don't care what I say, what I do, you're not going to affect me, right? So there's no emotional attachment for me. So I'm not going to get offended by anything you say. I might rage sometimes, like when people block me, but that's because I can't continue my assault.
Right, you can't continue, yeah.
So
what do you get out of, like, what is it, just your stupid pride? Like, what are you fighting? Like, what are you inflicting annoyance or pain on other people to get?
I think it's like an ego. It's an ego boost, right? Because you're winning. You feel like you're winning because this dude's constantly on the defensive. You know, guys like freaking out. But it plays into this because people, at least in the last like 5, 6, 7 years, have become so emotionally invested into politics beyond like what's healthy.
It's become our new religion. Yeah.
So when you have like tons of people on Twitter that just all they do is talk about politics, left wing, right wing politics, they're so emotionally invested in it that when you counter them, you play a devil's advocate or you say just a total amount of bullshit to them, they'll freak out. Right. So I can go to like any like, you know, like being liberal or any progressive website and just say a bunch of like just stupid shit to them. And the moment they do, I do that, they're all going to freak out. They're going to instantly block and ban me. They're going to instantly like start screeching at me like I'm wrong. And they have no concept that I'm trolling them right now.
Right.
I'm just this big, bad, evil Nazi sitting there saying this Nazi stuff. I'm like, no, I'm literally sitting here playing a video game on this screen, eating a Big Mac with his hand, watching him laughing at you, choking on my food because you're freaking out about it.
It's almost like you're playing off of their pride.
No, I'm playing.
Is it a humbling thing? Like you want to humble them because they're so.
No, I'm not playing off their pride. It's not really like a prideful thing. It's just they've treated it to such a degree that it's almost like I'm mocking, like you said, their religion, and they can't help.
You once said that you didn't like Roger Paxton because he took himself too seriously.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you're right. Roger takes himself too seriously. Yeah. You said that about Bittner. Mm-hmm. That's why you don't generally get along with people who take themselves too seriously.
Well, it's like I said, it's just because they get so invested in it, it's kind of futile, right? I mean, like you're going to go your whole life, right? Just doing what you want to do. And in the end, it doesn't matter. When you're 80 years old, does it really matter that how hard you champion this idea when you're 30 years old on the internet? Not really, you know? So
right.
The fact that people treat it as a life and death situation, especially like on the left-wing Twitter accounts and the left-wing Facebook groups where they'll literally like try to dox you and freak out about you, is just kind of hilarious because it's like, how about you go do something productive instead of sitting on the internet arguing with trolls that you don't understand are trolls? So, you know, when I look at people that do stuff on like PewDiePie's channel, I look at people just saying like racist things on the internet, I would consider like half the time it's not even really just a race. It's just an edgy teenager basically poking you, and you're mm-hmm. falling for it every single time. So the manifesto, when he says Candace Owens, or like the whole manifesto, which is nothing but memes, by the way. The whole thing is nothing but memes. He literally did a copypasta of like, oh, what the fuck did you say to me? The copypasta from like 10 years ago.
Explain what copypasta is for our less troll or less shitpost audience. Yeah.
It's a long time ago, someone would write like these big ass paragraphs in like a thread. Basically, someone would freak out. Mm-hmm. It became so funny because he said that people would copy and paste it into other threads. Eventually, hit so many threads, it becomes a meme itself. Mm-hmm. So, like the copy post he had at the end of it, you know, like you know, they asked him a question about you know who are you and like what did you say about me? I'm a top ranked sniper here. Was off some copypasta on a 4chan thread where some guy was freaking out about Call of Duty or something.
Right.
So he posts that. So people like don't understand that like, it's a copypasta that's like literally a decade old. They're like, oh man, this dude's like totally unhinged and whole range. Like, no, this whole manifesto is a troll. Like it's a massive troll. And they fall for it because they don't understand it. So they read through it and they're like, oh, he's got to be this terrible person. I'm like, I wouldn't even say like the dude's real. I mean, yeah, the dude shot up a mosque full of Muslims, but part of me is just like, I don't think he did that because legitimately he's racist. I think he legitimately did that because he's so inundated with memes and like, you know, the remove kebab stuff, the crusader, you know, Deuce Walt stuff. Like he's so
I'm sorry. I don't think that you get to a point of such depravity and evil that you go in and this is my problem with the whole argument. We probably should continue playing this and then we'll kind of break down like, but just I think it goes much deeper, but let's continue kind of on with mm-hmm. this. But I'll kind of stop it and we'll keep going.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And a few months ago, his fans started sort of spamming this phrase, subscribe to PewDiePie, in an attempt to kind of keep him from being eclipsed by another account that was going to have more followers than him. So it sort of became this competition, and then it became this joke, and now subscribe to PewDiePie is just kind of like a thing that people say on certain parts of the internet. It's just kind of like a signifier, like, I understand the internet, you understand the internet, this is how we're going to signal to each other that we understand the internet.
And this is what he's...
And that's all accurate, and he says it without... He understands it without judgment, which is where he goes wrong later on in the interview.
Signaling and saying that.
Yeah, so I have that in my head, and then I see all these other signs that something is weirdly kind of internet-y about all of this. Like, there's this...
Never discount the music or the mm-hmm. audio mm-hmm. imaging that goes around something. Mm-hmm. I want you to listen to how it shifts so you feel a certain way as you're consuming the information. as I said, I like the Daily. You get a lot of great information, but they're trying to get you to think a certain way and feel a certain way. And the way that you know that they're doing that is listen to the sound engineering and how it shifts.
Post on 8chan with
source. I've done this for 15 years. That's every commercial that I've ever produced. Every promo.
Just kind of like a scummy message board that lots.
He called 4chan a scummy message board.
Mm. Of extremists and weirdos go on. And in the post, there's this post. Yeah, so I have that in my head. And then I see all these other signs that something is weirdly kind of internet-y about all of this. Like, there's this post on 8chan, which is kind of like a scummy message board that lots of extremists and weirdos go on. And in the post, the gunman links to the Facebook stream before it happens. And
the Facebook stream that he will record of the massacre itself.
Exactly. And then he pastes a bunch of links to copies of his manifesto. He has a...
All right, so 8chan, scummy internet board full of extremists and weirdos?
No,
I mean, I've been on 8chan. I would say yes, but...
We've had multiple channels, right? So there's... 4chan was originally spawned off 2channel, right? So 2channel was a Chinese-Japanese message board where they pretty much just posted manga for the time being.
What is manga?
It's just basically novels of anime, if that's okay. The best way to describe it. So started as 2chan. We opened up American version of 4chan, which we only had like a couple boards at the time, which were dedicated to like video games, anime, stuff like that. We started adding more boards because more and more people went to it. So when we opened up the American version of 2chan, 4chan, the audience started to grow. So we started getting lots of like internet memes, lots of like trolling, stuff like that. So we had B, Robot 9K. We eventually got the K channel for guns. We eventually got that one. So it expanded from a few channels to about like 30 different channels. So when things get big, things splinter off in each different channel. So we had a 420 chan at one time, which was for like pot smokers. We had BBW chan for people that like thick women. So, I mean, literally, you can go there right now. So they're just really, really thick women.
Harry, please focus.
So, you know, we have tons of these channels, right? So we had multiple ones. I think during the time, like early 2000s, like Moot was banning people that were doing like cam girl raids, because we were doing like cam girl raids during the Scientology thing. So I was like, every time you do this, you know, we get shut down, so don't do it anymore.
Explain all of that to me. Like, what is a raid?
A raid is a call to action, right? So some guy is basically like, oh, dude, like this girl's doing something on the cam, post it. And, you know, usually it's like, you know, not your personal army, which is, you know, come to the channel asking for like 50 dudes to basically ruin this girl's day. But sometimes like the target was just so like hilarious because of like what she's doing. Like, for example, we had a woman called Sweet Eva. Sweet Eva was a 55-year-old crackhead that was doing cam shows on myfreecams.com. So she was like all
of
like,
an adult nature.
Adult nature, yeah.
Okay.
So we got her there. Her husband, Mike, was basically filming it for us. So she's doing like the whole like, you know, like nasty ass like cam girl shit where she's all like decrepit and shit. And her husband's like, yeah, baby, you go ahead and get it, you know, and just.
Oh, that sounds so sad.
So it was so disgusting to watch that, you know. But then we realized that she's kind of like schizophrenic. And she freaks out easy when she can't handle like too much pressure. So like we troll her and she would just freak out, and Mike would like threaten to beat us up and stuff. Like Mike would come on camera. He's like, you fucking goddamn people on the internet, you don't know what you're doing. Like, she's got schizophrenia.
That's horrible, James. Don't you understand? Like, maybe you're making me more sympathetic to the New York Times right now, to be honest.
But that's how it works. Because she was so easy to bait. In her husband, right. It wasn't really just about her. It was about her husband, because her husband will like throw lamps and shit. And like,
there is something to the fact that if you like memes, if you go on Instagram and you look at your stories and you get memes, then you should follow me on Instagram, C Spangle, or We Are Libertarians. We post great memes there. But those funny reaction memes, like I posted like the Fedora guy Valentine's Day cards, and I got a message from one of the guys in the cards, and he basically said, like, this has ruined my life. This is, like, just, you know, I hate this. Can you please take this down? I don't want to be – and I wanted to be like, dude, get smart and start selling, like, convention spots and autographs. Like you're to be a meme, people aspire to that, but it really was something that caused him pain. And so as much as you like memes, you have to understand there's a funny reaction behind any meme that is successful, or prank shows, or, you know, there is an unregulated nature. Like if we were going to do prank shows here, and we were going to go out to the public and do, like, you know, the Impractical Joker stuff. Like, you get releases, you get permission, you get, you know.
Yeah.
Like, if you're attached to an organization that can get sued. But if you're just an anonymous group of dudes on the internet who just think it's funny when this, you know, woman gets mad, there's no releases. It's just, like, there is an element to the internet that is so unempathetic and awful that is encapsulated by that story. But we are so immersed in it that that wouldn't even phase us. We'd just watch the video of this woman freaking out and we'd laugh. We would never think, wow, this woman's being caused, like, we'll talk a little bit more about it, but I think later on, but at what point, James, do you go, this is kind of mean, I should stop?
Well, I never been like, it's mean. I mean, a lot of the times, like, a lot of the targets would just bring it on themselves. Like, for example, Scientology. We targeted Scientology for, like, a good year. Like, Scientology, as you know, is a scam.
Allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
A scam. Xenu, you know?
Allegedly.
So, Scientology got into our targets, you know, during the whole, like, time for V for Vendetta came out, so the Guy Fawkes mask. They came into our target because Tom Cruise was basically being crazy on Oprah. So we targeted Scientology for a whole year.
So basically, as this kid says on the YouTube chat here, KGB Bot says, it's not an ego boost. Most trolls just like to rip the fake mask off of e-celebrities. So it's a little bit of, you're too big for your britches, we're going to bring you back down to earth, or you're scamming people. It's almost like you're the judge, jury, and executioners of people who are taking it a little too far.
For example, 4chan would not have got as big as it did if we didn't do the Scientology thing, and then Fox News and Bill O'Reilly would have kept his mouth shut. So there's an internet video. Are you able to, like, do this live?
I can play something.
Internet hate machine.
Okay. Now, what's the Bill O'Reilly thing?
That's the Bill O'Reilly did.
Okay. Yeah.
He started the story that went on to the rest of the Fox News.
All right, I'm going to go to Know Your Meme. Mm-hmm. There is somebody's full-time job to populate knowyourmeme.com.
Good. The curator. We'll go down in history.
The term internet hate machine, anonymous on Fox 11. Yep. Should I play that?
Yep.
Okay.
This is where 4chan exploded.
Okay. We're getting there. We just opened 1,700 tabs because...
Could just went to YouTube.
I could have. I could have done that. Mm-hmm. It would have been much faster. And, all right, here we go.
Dear Fox.
Okay, that's not right. Sorry. Yeah, all right, everybody.
You don't want the creepy.
They call themselves Anonymous. They are hackers on steroids, treating the web like a real-life video game.
This is KTTV on July 26, 2007 in L.A. It's a local Fox affiliate.
Sacking websites, invading MySpace accounts, disrupting innocent people's lives. And if you fight back, watch out. Fushima tracks down the hacker gangs in this Fox 11 investigation.
Destroy. Die. Attack. Threats from a gang of computer hackers calling themselves Anonymous.
I've had 7 different passwords and they've got them all so far.
They attack innocent people like an internet hate machine.
We are Anonymous. We are song. We do not forgive. We do not forgive.
Those who fight back.
Now you two are laughing because you know this is a joke. Like, you're like, not only is Fox being ridiculous, it's the people who are participating in the "we are Anonymous." Like, you know, he's one of yours who is basically signaling to the rest of you, look at these fucking idiots that I just. It's like when Howard Stern used to do prank calls, and they'd play him, and they go, "Oh my god, we're all in on the joke except for this one idiot."
They actually, right? Fox News actually got like a picture of like a van, right? Like an actual white van.
Right.
And then blew the van up. Like, we're actually bombing, you know, like vans and shit, like terrorists. And so, like, we called it, like, the pedo van. Like, oh shit, they blew up the pedo van, dude. Like, where am I going to fucking get my, like, hentai and shit now? Because Fox News made it to a point, like, they were trying to, like, dial down that we're domestic terrorists, right? Yeah. So the moment they made this article, like, people would call, like, Fox News affiliates, CNN affiliates with, like, you know, a voice changer over Skype or something, and basically issued, like, these terroristic threats, these fake bomb threats to the Olympics and stuff, because they would roll with it. So 4chan went from... Yeah, so...
This is the exploding van. I didn't mean for it to start playing.
So, like, imagine if you're an internet troll and, like, you're just from this, like, stupid anime web, you know, forum that's just basically raiding, like, camera websites and talking shit on MySpace. To the fact that now, like, national syndicated news is basically calling you a domestic terrorist and basically believes anything you say. And now you're rolling up, like, 2007, 2008, and after that came Gamergate, with, like, the whole women on the internet with video games freaking out as well. You just took this tiny little, like, microcosm of the internet and just exploded it into, like, a gigantic network of people and trolls and hate speech advocates, free speech advocates. Everything under the sun is now on 4chan, 8chan because of Fox News calling them domestic terrorists.
Which has been my argument about Alex Jones the whole time. You've mainstreamed Alex Jones. Mm-hmm. Instead of letting him be in his own little corner of the internet where he's not hurting anybody, he's just, people are just listening to him and, like, sitting silently by, you know. Now he is in part, he's part of meme culture, which is way more powerful than any government force. Like, I have been talking to one campaign here locally. I'm like, do you want to win the election? Make memes. And so they made, like, a silly song about the mayor who is bad at potholes. Yeah. The mayor we talked about earlier.
Yeah, pothole.
The Republican candidate, my former employer, created the song called Pothole Joe. Okay. And, you know, then there's memes of potholes everywhere.
The Pothole Bachelor one is one of my favorites.
It's starting to pick up. Mm-hmm. It's starting to catch on. And like, their campaign is like, no, we're going to focus on crime. I'm like, people don't care about crime. Because what you don't understand is that... That's too serious and too sad. And not for nothing, unfortunately, it's happening to people who are in the drug trade, who are of Harry...
What?
Hmm? What? Harry, what? Could what? You say this for me? I don't want to get in trouble.
Hoosiers?
Yes, people, human beings. Yes.
Human beings that are...
But are involved in the drug trade.
Oh, okay.
Of the urban zip codes. And so, like, your suburban white people, let's just be real, they don't care about those people.
Yeah.
Because they think of them as those people.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. Now they were getting robbed at gunpoint on the canal. Now they care. Like, whoa, right. Whoa, whoa, what's going on here?
But when you're paying $500 because your rim got bent on a pothole and you're posting about it, how you're mad about you have this expense because they don't fix the roads. And it's like, it's not a life or death situation, but it's annoying and it makes you mad and it makes your friends mad and it doesn't make everybody sad. It makes them mad. And then you bring in the memes and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, he's to blame for the thing that's making everybody mad. And then memes end up electing a mayor because... It's not too serious, but it's a serious enough issue. It's a dereliction of duty. It's like, it's that in-between spot.
It is nothing like rolling by in your 26-year-old Subaru and seeing an $85,000 Mercedes on the side of the road with a flat tire because of a pothole, and you just keep rolling by because you know that guy's like, oh, look at that guy, that old Subaru, and he's right. All angry and cranky. So, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's what meme culture is about. It humbles the proud, and it entertains the masses over things that aren't too edgy. Like 9/11 memes, it took 14 or 15 years before you could go to 4chan and see 9/11 memes probably the day after. But like it took 14 or 15 years for memes of the 9/11 variety to start be acceptable in terms of posting. Now you see them all the time because it's not as offensive. And that's the thing is like, meme culture has gone beyond where James, as you listen to this, just kind of think about the concept of what James said. They started taking us so seriously and starting to give us more power than we had, and so more people were attracted to this movement. Yeah. And so as you listen to the New York Times, think about that.
Yeah, because
70.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, because you were talking about, like, you know, like basically young adults who no one listened to, no one gave a crap about, you know,
yes.
The only safe haven they had was online because at that time, you know, nerd culture was not popular.
Okay. Right.
If you liked manga, Dragon Ball, and anything else, no one cared.
I mean, do you remember about 10 years ago, less than 10 years ago, VH1 had like a show with the Revenge of the Nerds guys, and it was like nerds competing in a house. And like that was edgy. And now that's kind of like, and then Big Bang Theory comes along, and say what you want about Big Bang Theory, it's like Will and Grace or Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. It normalizes the nerdier part of culture and the geekier part of culture, and allows people to kind of go, yeah, I'm going to take my kid to a comic book convention, and I may be the CEO of this company, but I love comic books. You wouldn't have said that 15 years ago when we were younger. But
Big Bang Theory is offensive. So.
Right. So let's continue on.
Record of the massacre itself.
Exactly. And then he pastes a bunch of links to copies of his manifesto. He has a 74-page manifesto that he wrote, and some of the stuff was fairly standard hard right ideology, very fascist, very white nationalist. Muslims are kind of like the primary target for white nationalists around the world, calling them invaders, saying they're taking over. You know, this is a sort of classic white nationalist trope. And then there was all this kind of meta.
Do you feel in reading the manifesto, because you read all of it, James, do you feel that is an accurate analysis of what that guy believes?
About invading?
Pull your mic up a little bit too for me, please.
Like invading, right?
But I mean, just his analysis of, you know, it had all the, it was white nationalist, it was all this. I mean, if you read it on its face, yes, the New York Times is right. But when you understand the context of what you brought to it, their analysis becomes incorrect, right?
Well, the thing is, like, a lot of this is born, you know, a lot of this animosity has always been born from bad political decisions, like really, really bad political decisions. And I think I brought it up in the chat one time. It's, you know, it used to be like you get your dad or your grandpa complaining about, like, Mexicans taking your jobs, right? Oh, they come here to take the jobs, even though they don't, right? They take jobs that I don't want to do, you don't want to do. Factories have like hundreds of positions that aren't being filled because no one wants to do it for $12 an hour,
right?
Except people that are immigrants coming here to do it until they can get their kids into college and their kids do better. But that's sort of immigration is fine. But when a lot of these people that do this, right, a lot of people that wrote, like the guy that wrote the manifesto, you know, specifically he mentioned Europe a lot of the time. And the reason why he mentioned Europe a lot of the time as opposed to the United States as an issue is Europe has this really, really bad immigration policy. Like, you hear every day about, like, a gang of, like, you know, 14 people from Somalia, like, killed three people, or, like, this Muslim from, like, you know, Syria or something came here and bombed somebody. Like, the rape gangs that happen in the UK, like, all this stuff gets echoed through, like, these channels. So anytime, like, you see something like that, and then you look at these countries that have, like, these no-go zones, mm-hmm. where it's, like, you know, you'd be like, if we went there, you'd be the only white person in this like 4 square mile area because it's a no-go zone. So when these stories get amplified and put out there, and then Europe has a reflexive reaction to try to withdraw the stories, oh, we don't have a problem with like Somalians coming over, like, you know, by like the thousands and thousands and thousands and committing crime. Then they post crime statistics, and the crime statistics went through the roof because it's not really like technically a racial thing. I don't even see it as a racial thing. It's just, I'm very aware that the culture in, like, you know, Iraq or the culture in Somalia or Ethiopia is radically different than the culture in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that if I'm in Somalia, I might have to stab somebody sometime. You know, it just is what it is.
Right.
So, you know, when it happens, like, they'll blame it on the racial group. It's like, you know, it's the blacks or it's the Muslims. It's really, the problem comes down to a culture that's really not compatible.
A difference of social norms.
Yeah. It's like,
and then the language difference doesn't allow you to work through those differences in social norms. And then you add on the fact that the people who are coming from these other cultures are moving into places that are European socialist countries. And so, like, let's take Germany, for example. If you're in Berlin, in East Berlin, it's still very poor. There's a lot of socialist programs. There's a lot of government housing. There's a lot of food programs. And anytime you have bureaucracy running something, it's an inefficient organization. And so there's a limited amount of resources. And so you have people fighting for what they view as scraps. Mm-hmm. And so when you bring other people into a system that is already strained, and they now are fighting for resources with people that they cannot talk to, cannot understand, and they perceive as violent,
mm-hmm.
the fear goes up. Politicians start to demagogue to take advantage of that fear. people start to use that emotion to take control of those people. And it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so we start with the problem that the government, that government policy is causing most of this. And so, yeah, you end up with a set of social norms that are clashing. And here's the fundamental difference with America. We don't have that same problem. And that's what people don't seem to understand, is that we don't have the same, like, European societies have a much, like, culture and race and origin means so much more there. Like, I have thought my entire life I was mostly German. Right. My sister just did her 23andMe, and we're mostly Europe. We're mostly Irish and English.
Thank you, FBI.
Right. I had no idea. Like, I had heard I was 1/16th Indian. I have no idea if that's true. I don't know if I'm more Native American than Elizabeth Warren. Like, I never ragged on Warren too much, except when it was funny. But everybody has that. If you're an American who is our age, everybody has, you know, well, we came from Germany, and you sort of vaguely know your family history, but you don't have families that have lived in the same spot for hundreds of years, or institutions that have lasted thousands of years in America. You just don't. You have e pluribus unum, out of many one. Mm-hmm. And it's many cultures combining to create the United States of America. We are a country built on multiculturalism. And that's fundamentally different than the DNA of European socialist ethnostates. And so when conservatives try to say, they try to force the Mexicans into that box, I just look at them and I go, you're telling me that the technically Caucasian,
mm-hmm,
Catholic,
mm-hmm,
conservative,
mm-hmm,
pro-life, pro-family people that are coming into this country disagree with your values? It doesn't make sense. They're just trying to copy the same demagoguery of Europe. And so it's nonsense. It just doesn't work if you're on the right. Like, you sound foolish for anybody that's read a book.
The problem with Europe.
Hold on. You turned it off.
Is it on?
No, what's wrong? There you go. See, this is why we had to take that button away from Harry. Now you've turned it off. There we
can
go. This is the case. Right. This is like the Three Stooges. Yeah, to right.
You can hear me now, though, right?
Yes.
So the difference between the United States, right, and Europe in general is, when I look at Mexico and I look at, you know, Chile, Argentina, Colombia, I'll go down the list, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can match, and this is why, like, a lot of, like, people will panic on, like, you know, especially if I look at a white nationalist community, for example, is when I look at, like, Latin American countries. They have the same birth rate, the same, essentially the same culture, because all Latin Americans are pretty much European at this point. There's hardly any indigenous communities there. They've all been colonized by Spain hundreds and hundreds of years ago. So they're essentially the same. They just speak a different European language than what we do.
Right.
The problem, like, you know, with Europeans, and the Europeans will try to lead the front on a lot of the shit posting that occurs on there, is Europe is basically like a skip and a hop stone away from the continent of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
The issue with Africa as a continent,
they actually have boats that go from Italy and Spain to Northern Africa, and then it's like these humanitarian groups that are largely funded by the left and left groups in Europe, and like, just saying this fact could get me put on like a hate site, SPLC will, but it's true. You see the boats, you see the patterns of these NGOs that are basically just ferrying people from the Northern Horn of Africa into Sicily and Italy and Spain. There's a lot of anger towards that.
It goes beyond that. So we've spent 600-something years, even further beyond if you go back to ancient Rome, like raping that continent. So we've taken all the resources. We chopped down trees. We killed all the animals and plant life there. The Sahara Desert's growing by inches every year. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The problem is, like, as we did that, we forced, you know, Christianity on them. We forced Islam on them. A lot of African nations, you know, I go to Uganda, or I go to, like, Ethiopia, or I go to Sudan, they have large polygamy, like, you know, they're polygamous by nature. They were that before we introduced these religions that pretty much sanctioned it.
The very names of the countries they were all created, you know, during colonial times.
Yeah, right. So I add that in there, right? And I know that Africa is running out of room. I know it's running. The Sahara Desert is getting bigger. The water supply is drying up.
Yep.
These countries have a fertility rate index from between 7 to 9.4. There's an article on the BBC of a woman in Uganda that's 35 years old, my age, that has 36 children.
Jeez.
And it's like, and she actually is like, well, my dad has the same issue. You know, he's got 50 children because he's got four wives. And this happens in the Middle East and there. So when I look at Europe, it has like a 1.2 or like a 0.8 fertility index. I look at Japan that has like a 0.5 fertility index. You're eventually getting to a point by like 20, you know, 56. Africa, people in Africa will make up the bulk of the population because we've taken all the resources out there. We airdropped them food. We airdropped them vaccines so they're not dying from malaria anymore. They're not starving themselves anymore. We're taking care of that. But we inflicted such a wound on that continent.
And continue to do so with the World Trade Organization. If you read John Perkins' book, basically, Western countries still continue to extract resources by making loans to these countries against the resources that they can never pay back.
Right.
And it becomes another form of indentured servitude. And then you have the Chinese coming in, building infrastructure and doing the same thing.
So when I look at it from like, if I look at it from this white supremacist perspective, if you think the 10,000 Somalis, the 20,000 Syrians coming through now is an issue, when Africa's water dries up and you have a population that's three times the size of India, that's going to go north because Europe is in a temperate zone. It's not going to have the Sahara Desert issue. It's not going to have the plundering and the strip mining of entire like agricultural communities that currently occurs in Africa. It doesn't have that problem.
So is this the conversation that like when they talk about white supremacists and like is like I will watch Paul Joseph Watson or Sargon, but I've never really heard this.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the conversation that the New York Times hears and then labels it as a white supremacist? Because what you have is – what you've just presented is, you know, here's facts and here's like data points. But it's probably usually phrased in much more racist language. Well, they're invading. They're going to take over. Like it's more fear based.
Well, yeah, they'll make it a fear based thing where it's like, you know, they're going to take over our culture. I mean,
the Tommy Robinsons of the world.
I mean, literally they are. That's, you know, because Europe has a low fertility index. Places like India and Asia and Africa have high fertility indexes. Eventually, you're going to see over the course of the next couple centuries, people that are white will essentially be eradicated at this point. Well, that's a bad word for it, but that's what they're going to say. You're dwindling while these other populations are growing, especially with industrialization when there's now jobs, there's medicine, there's food.
Mm-hmm.
And they still keep the practice of like, you know, 5, 6, 7 fertility indexes. You're eventually going to get replaced. And that's just how it is. This is how things work. If I look at ant colonies, right, and I compare people to
It's a weird thing, Harry, to be worried about something that you will not
deal with. Harry's going to be the new white.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I mean,
doing my best.
He's going to beat us with whips.
We won't talk about Harry's ancestry.com. He was helping strip mine.
So When this situation occurs, and I liken it to ant colonies, you know, if you watch ant colonies, they essentially grow. And there's always like you have two ant colonies here. One ant colony tends to outgrow the other one. Depends on where it's located on like your yard or where it's located in the jungle or whatever. One colony gets bigger, and now they're going to have to fight for resources. That larger colony ends up overtaking the smaller colony. It includes like a lot of death on the other ant colonies, a lot of integration, capturing, basically taking young back to its colony and storing it there. Now, humans don't usually do that, but the Earth does have finite resources.
Yes.
People have fought numerous wars over resources. So in terms of like, you know, are they being racist for the sake of being racist? Yeah, for some degree they are.
Mm-hmm.
But if I look at the concept of demographics is destiny, and I look at, you know, trends, where things are trending, how things are trending, I can see some sort of panic for people in Europe because you basically ruined an entire continent for hundreds of years, and now the continent's going to bite back.
Yeah.
Correct, yeah. And the more they try to do to help that continent, they're actually ruining it. So bringing all that aid that you're basically just ruining, it's because now they don't have to develop farms and try to fix the Sahara because why? You're bringing water and aid and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Just type in libertarian opinion of foreign aid and you'll see the cost of it.
Yeah. Right. That's an issue with like libertarians too, is like they don't see it in that scope. Like the scope was, you know, especially if I'm like, okay, I'm okay with immigration, but they don't see it on that scope. It's when you have nations that have been like third world for forever, and they're still getting raped and pillaged by, you know, countries that are like in the second world status, industrial nations like China, industrial nations like India, superpower 2020, by the way. These people, they get displaced, and they're always going to go to the most profitable area for them. They're not going to stop in the next country in Africa. They're going to go straight to Europe every single time. And Europe doesn't have the space, the housing, the food markets to sustain. You know, Sweden can barely sustain like the 20, 30,000 people that's in. It just doesn't have the tax base to do that. Now, amplify that to 1 million, 2 million, 5 million, 6 million, 7 million.
Well, just look at the disruption that 1 or 2 million immigrants from Syria and Africa have caused in Germany alone.
Yeah.
And the discord that has caused.
Correct.
It's going to be – we'll probably be dead, but, you know, like 2060, 2070, it's going to be a hell of a fun time because you're going to have a ton of, like, just ridiculous, like, land wars.
Mm. Yeah, it is. We've been in this period of peace because we have nuclear weapons, mm-hmm. but it is, you know, what happens when they're like, you're not going to nuke your own home.
Well, yeah, nuclear weapons and the spread of capitalism.
Absolutely.
You know? Because that's the other thing is the one thing to stop a lot of that is the social programs ruin it. Because they fix the markets.
Government intervention from the UN, from the European Union.
If you allow
neo-colonialism.
If you allow capitalism to do its thing of regulating scarce resources that have other uses. So like housing, all these food, stuff like that. So it makes it, you know, not like I can go here, but I can't get food or water, you know, so I'm not going to make it there. But if you fix the market with these government programs, that makes it, okay, so if I make it there, I'm going to, you know, they're going to make sure I get a house, they're going to make sure I get food. They're fixing that capitalism thing that would stop someone from going somewhere, you know, they kind of fixed.
Reinhold says, who caused the discord? The people coming in or the people who can't change their backward views about what their people should look like?
Well, it's beyond like what they should look like. I agree that's not a issue you should, you know, judge this based on.
The difference the difference between me and Harry is melanin. Like, yeah. That's such a superficial thing.
It's a superpower, by the way, if you ask certain people.
Superpower helps my intelligence, makes me jump higher.
All right.
The issue with, like, if I were to view it from the frame of the guy that shut up the mosque, and I understand that demographics is destiny, and I understand that because democracy, the biggest flaw of democracy is it promotes the will of the people, and if, you know, this is how democracy works. I want a certain law. If I get 50% plus one, it's a law.
Right.
So his panic is solely based on demographics is destiny, and, like, I know that millions and millions more people are going to come into my country that are culturally different than me, mm-hmm. speak different languages than me, have different belief systems than me, and these people now can vote in my elections. They can pick my politicians, and those politicians are probably not going to vote in a way I want them to do, which the main point, the main issue here is democracy in itself. Democracy, it will kill itself based on that. That's why you see like so many bad laws today. It's why you get like AOC and people promoting that. It's because you'll kill yourself through democracy.
So what would you see, what would you like to see instead?
Well, Harry wants the kingdom, you know, but it's just we have a republic, and we're like conservatives keep thinking that we'll uphold the Constitution, nothing will ever happen. Like, they don't follow it anyway. They're going to promote whatever law they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So these people's fear in that is when suddenly like 1 billion Somalis are now in like Germany or France or something, and they're all voting. They're going to vote in a block, you know, because white people voted in a block for hundreds of years in America. Well, do you want to free the slaves today? No, good. We'll do it next year. You know, so they always voted in a block because it's a strategy that even like Mormons, you know, like the Quiverful movement, Mormons to some extent, they practice as well. Like the whole point that Jim Bob off the Duggars has like 17 kids is a demographic destiny. It's based on the Bible concept that, you know, arrows in a quiver. The more arrows in a quiver I have at the gate, I can overcome the gate. So the Duggars, and especially people in the Quiverful movement, see their children as the arrows and the gates as the political establishment. If I want my, you know, fundamentalist religious utopia, I have to have more children and I can vote you out in local elections, which move up the state elections to federal elections. That's the kind of concept that's going through their heads. If I don't get rid of all these immigrants, they're going to vote against me and take away things I like. And if they take away things I like, it's not worth living anymore. So I'm going to shoot up the mosque. Right. I'm going to shoot up this.
And it's what we talk about all the time. government is force, and it's two people with differing values fighting over mm-hmm. the gun. And if you win the gun, then you get to put it to the other person's head. Mm-hmm. So take away the gun. Mm-hmm. Let's have a stateless society where people can live in. And this is really like the crazy part to me. You know, if I do nothing else in the course of this podcast, all I care about is getting you to realize that your world and what you can control are your decisions mm-hmm. and the world in front of you and your community, the 100 people that you see on a daily basis. It's a radical notion in a world that says one individual's actions in a country on the other side of the world means that your rights should be taken away. Mm-hmm. What insanity is that?
I mean, it's sort of insane, but it's sort of not. Like, in a perfect world, everybody would think exactly like I think, would vote the way I want them to vote, would do things I love to vote. Because I would love, like, my little anarchy utopia where I can do whatever I want whenever I want. But I understand that, you know, by and large, like, different cultures have a lot different values than I have. Nothing is objective in this world. Everything's subjective to where I go. And I understand that because things are subjective and we work in a democracy, that people will vote against me. Often they will, because my views are a very, very small minority. I mean, libertarian views are like, what, 1% of like the actual population currently? I mean, I know we use the trope that, you know, you're all libertarian because you want to be left alone, but voting trends say the difference. You know, we say like, oh, you're a libertarian because, yeah, you want to leave. They say that until it's voting time. You know, then it's like they vote for these really oppressive laws and these laws that kind of expand the role of government. Even conservatives that beat, you know, small government all the mm-hmm. time, they say that. So if I look at his perspective, this huge perspective, that's his main fear. And you'll see that in the libertarian movement as well with the non-open border libertarians, the close wall, build the wall libertarians. Same thing. They're afraid that all these people from South America come up, vote in their elections, vote for more socialism, vote for whatever they want, you know, and it goes against their current wishes. Like, but that's the flaw in democracy. That's always been the flaw in democracy. That's ruined a lot of nations based on like what happens and what they do, based on who they vote for and basically what they vote for at the time. So I understand his premise and why he did it. I understand like that fear. That's a long game type of fear that you're fearing, like, you know, 100 years in the future, because this is an inevitable thing. This is something that will occur. We don't have enough jobs for the people to migrate at that level. There's not enough jobs for those people. When people don't have a steady income to like feed themselves, clothe themselves, you know, send their children to school, they'll do things to get things done. And I'm not saying they're going to be violent right out the gate, but if you have the choice of starving or stealing a piece of bread, you're probably going to steal the piece of bread.
Right.
So I understand that, you know, population grows and population is going to shift to these smaller countries that can't handle the burden, the load. So I think instead of, you know, being reactionary, well, we have to kill them there. You know, we'll kill them here in this mosque. It's there has to be at least some effort to control like these old superstitions, these old like religious values that basically promote the idea that's going to cause your inevitable doom. The polygamy stuff, the religious, you know, zealotry that's occurring in like a lot of these cultures, to be a one unified nation with people that, you know, are kind, compassionate. These old ideologies have to die. You can't have people believing like, you know, like Sharia, for example, and that can't mingle with the West. It doesn't mingle with the West. We can't have people like have like three or four wives popping out like 30, 40 children and expecting to actually make it in a Western society. That's cost so much money to do.
Yeah.
They have to be funded by the government at that point. Yep. So until these things are solved and the population crisis goes down and we kind of pull out of Africa, kind of get, you know, isolate ourselves for a while. We just need to isolate ourselves for a while. And kind of fix what's occurred in all these foreign nations instead of bombing them, instead of wrecking them with, like, you know, economic warfare, cyber warfare, whatever we're doing. Get them to a point that they're where we are on, like, a Western civilization end where we're okay with, like, private property rights. We're okay with, you know, freedom of speech. Get them to that point, then integrate them. But we can't just, at the current point in time, throw everybody in the kettle and expect like situations like this not to happen. This feeds. So
that sounds like a separate but equal argument. In nationalism, it sounds like, I don't know if you're making the case for nationalism, mm-hmm. but the nationalist argument, as you just articulated it, really sounds separate but equal. We'll just take care of ourselves. Well, I mean, am I misrepresenting? Like,
yeah, because no. That's what I heard. Like, I basically heard you like, yeah, put up the walls until you learn to play nice with our culture.
Right.
I mean, it's his mind frame. So if I'm speaking on his,
you're not saying that this is your view. Yeah. You're saying this is you're interpreting what the worldview of this particular individual.
Well, a lot of people. It's not just this person. Yeah. He's just more radical about it. A lot of people view it like that, and it's just because throughout history, every instance in history, there's always a clash, a conflict of culture. When it's, oh, we go to China, we have a war in China, it's a conflict of culture because we're having a war in China. It's because European thought, Western thought has always been dominant. You know, we've gone to these countries, we colonize these countries, we force them to do what we want to. They have to play by our rules. So when I have that mind frame that you have to play by my rules, everything has to play by my rules, are not allowed in. But at the same time, other cultures play that same thing too. It's not like, you know, in Saudi Arabia, you can be a Shia Muslim and go into Saudi Arabia. You're not.
Right.
It's a different culture. Even though it's the same, you know, branch of religion, same culture, basically geographically, you can't. They don't like you there. They'll kick you out. They'll do a whole bunch of other stuff. This occurs everywhere in the world. These little segments of population that isolate themselves. And if they can't isolate themselves and they try to open it up, it usually gets lashback. So yeah, even if I am a Shia Muslim and I try to go to like Saudi Arabia outside the pilgrimage to Mecca, I might be okay until someone finds out I'm Shia. Then there's the case in the news, the guy beheaded the dude in the cab.
Yeah.
You know, this,
yeah,
this
gets a medal.
I mean, this is on the news now because, like, you know, it's this big event, guy shot up the thing. He made the manifesto that made it get attention. But this stuff happens everywhere in the world. Try being a Muslim in India or like a Hindu in northern India or in Pakistan. This
or try being a Christian in some of these places. Like Christians, right. Believe it or not, I mean, not here in America, but Christians are killed more than any other ethnic group around the world. Like if you have...
If you're not in the United States, you're up in the western part of Africa.
Right, you're dead. Let's let's continue on with. And, go ahead, Harry.
I was going to say, and in the western part of Africa is like now, like this could be, you know, like take this with you with us. Like a lot of people is like for the. I also had the culture shock of like understanding that these different types of Muslims, because like when people were talking about Muslims, the only Muslim I've ever contacted was like Western African Muslims that was more, a little bit more tempered, a little bit more westernized because they had to deal with Christianity in the West.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, not that, you know, not the other side of sex. So like finding out is like, oh wow, there's these other, like there's other cases just like there's Baptists and Catholics.
The chat Friday made a good point here. The masses of dumb, scared people are hindering our liberty. I don't think most people, or at least libertarians, would argue that. We can see more of our liberties every time. It's not a matter of – he's basically saying, like, it seems foolish for people to blame the loss of liberty on other peoples as opposed to the people who are actually making the resources more scarce, which is the government, which is government right. policies, which – you know, so both sides are blaming each other in a very old world mentality of those people, because mm-hmm. it's easy to look at you – and me and see the physical difference as opposed to
heights, good looks, good looking.
Yep. Right. And then you, and then, or versus the thing that I have chosen to participate in and have pledged allegiance to in school and pay taxes to is oppressing me. I think that's a much harder cognitive dissonance mm-hmm. in our minds to say, yeah, you're really, it's like the meme with the boot on your own head. But let's jump back into this because I think it's going to lead into another aspect of his psychology that I kind of want to break down.
Lists around the world, calling them invaders, saying they're taking over. You know, this is a sort of classic white nationalist trope. And then there was all this kind of meta humor, like saying that he was radicalized by video games, which is another thing that internet extremists love to sort of troll the media with, like, you know, he posted previews of his gun on Twitter. The whole thing just kind of felt like it just set this shooting up as like almost an internet performance. Like it was native to the internet and it was born out of and aimed into this culture of extremely concentrated internet radicalism.
But underneath it all is white nationalism, white supremacy, whatever you want to call it. A kind of racism that has always existed. So why does the internet's role in this feel especially different?
Before we jump into that, I want to
make clear that like this is not.
Please stop talking.
A kind of racism that has always existed.
I don't want to hear.
So why does the internet's
Michael Barbaro's
internet radicalism?
Let me just pause this. I need to refresh the page or something. The difference between white supremacy and it's not going to go back to the same place. This is going to be. I'll just So that leads me to the distinction between, I mean, white supremacy and white nationalism and nationalism, and all that gets thrown into a bucket. And Trump doesn't help, because a lot of it is just, we want to use this mindset. Like, you know, Terry Moran of ABC asked Donald Trump, you know, about white nationalism and the shooting, and he basically said, this is a very small group of people who would perpetrate this sort of thing, and you're making it into something bigger. And somehow that was just the most offensive thing Donald Trump could have said, when it's absolutely the truth.
Right.
I don't think that there is. I think it is a number of people that is growing, which we'll talk about on the other side of this. But nationalism, white supremacy, white nationalism, in terms of this particular culture, is it all interchangeable? Is it distinctive? Are you a white supremacist if you're a nationalist? Like, what is it in this world? How do they view it?
Well,
we know the media views it all as one thing.
Well, the media has a wrong pulse on it. So, like, the instinctive things that you see on the media was like, Trump's enabling this, right? Trump's enabling this because he does this. But if you actually read the forums, you actually looked into it, white supremacists hate the dude. The white supremacists hate the dude for several reasons. Not building the wall quick enough. Not basically making Jerusalem the capital of Israel. Giving money to Israel. Like, shit, they're done the moment he gave money to Israel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because if you're a white supremacist, you don't like Jews.
Right.
And their presence all up in Israel all the time. So it's like, it amazes me that the media will paint this. This is why you're seeing a bunch of Yang Gang memes, right? So the alt-right and anybody who's in these like little like isolated silo groups on the internet promotes the Yang Gang thing, which is funny.
For presidential candidate Andrew Yang, Democrat.
Which the thought is, we're always going to give money to Israel. We're always going to do this stupid shit. We should just crash the system by giving everybody $1,000, and then in the chaos of the crash, we'll take back, you know, what we're going to do.
The burgeoning collapsitarian movement, yep. Which you'll hear more and more about, which is like, let's elect Andrew Yang, who wants to give everybody $1,000 a month, UBI. We can't afford it. Let's just collapse the system.
Right.
Cowabunga it is, which I think is absolutely moronic, but we'll talk about collapsitarianism some other time, but... Yep. Yeah.
So, you know, their pulse has been wrong on it. And I don't think that, you know, explicitly, like, these people are white nationalists. It's not about building your ethno state. It's just a bunch of lashing out. And it's lashing out because of a political establishment doing something that they disagree with. Because I look at these people, they're like 20 years old, 18 years old, you know, 26 years old. They're kind of young. And it's not like these kids went to Klan rallies or they went to like neo-Nazi rallies. They never got indoctrinated like that. It's always been they've been isolated on the internet. And when they've been isolated on the internet, it just evolved into, well, you know, I'm 24-year-old neat. I'm not doing anything with like my life right now. I'm just soaking up all this information on the internet. And you know what? Like, yeah, these news stories that the media keeps pushing, these like, here's another news story. Here's another, the 24/7 news cycle. It's just bad things happening, bad things happening, bad things happening over and over again. It gives you like, it's nudging you to that edge where it's like, you know, fuck all this bad stuff. Let's blame it on these people because these people are in like 30% of these news stories.
The media, and you'll see this, I mean, in this, but the media overall doesn't understand its own role in creating this particular movement of people.
Yeah, and Nee said a word. I wanted to define it because this word probably went over a lot of you guys, a lot of people head who are not aware of it. Define neat.
The N-word? Oh.
Neat? Like as in, I'll take my drink neat?
Not in education, employment, or training. Basically, I'm the dude that plays League of Legends 14 hours a day at home, 9 o'clock in the morning. I don't go to bed till like 4 o'clock at night.
Not in education. I'm not like, or occupational training. So they're basically 18-year-old adults with basically no career path. They're not in college.
Incels.
They're not doing any.
Let's be honest. If you're 18 at home, no career path, no education, you ain't getting any
boobs. There's always some girl with low self-esteem, my dude.
I know.
That's true. But James has had far more
But there's a lot of neat. There's a lot of neats in Europe because of Europe's large social safety net, right? So if, you know, you're only paying like $40 a college is free, or there's no jobs, you know, so they subsidize you with council housing, council flats, there's a lot of needs in Europe compared to the United States. In the United States, we can't do that often unless you're living with mom and dad till you're 30 because we don't have a social safety net. You either get a job or you're on the street.
Men without purpose.
Yeah. So in Europe, where they have these safety nets where it's just like, yo, I'm like 32 and I'm still doing my bachelor's degree because college is free in this part of Europe.
It's why you have a lot of European streamers and can take off because they're just kind of sitting at home and just making Twitch money.
We can jump back into this later, but I don't want to break into the conversation. But I was talking to my therapist today, so I still go to therapy. I check in once a month, you know, try to be emotionally healthy and stable. And Harry put his headphones down and just walked away. He's like, I need more coffee for this shit. And I was talking about, I don't even know that I want to say this just because a white male's complaining on the internet. Oh, no. Because the idea of a white male perspective in our culture has become offensive almost. And, you know, I'm working on this podcast that'll be coming out soon. A lot of racial conversation. And one of the guys that I was Harry. I was talking to somebody who's a young black male, and he, you know, we come from just two, like his, I don't know what it's like to be him, and he thinks he knows what it's like to be me. And it's just like, do you think we all just walk around in Klan hoods? like it just was bizarre, but you know, it's, there's just this very much this attitude of it's time for you to sit down and shut up. And I think it is, and he basically said to me, you're just now being treated the way that the rest of us have been treated. I don't think that's an unfair statement to say that white men are not enjoying being treated the way that a lot of minorities or women or the intersectional class has been treated in terms of dismissiveness, like we're going to dismiss you, we're going to dehumanize you, we're not going to listen to your perspective, we're going to, I mean, you're making a face, like, do you disagree with me, Harry?
Yeah, it doesn't sound right. One, because you're not white, you're Irish now, you found that out, so throw away your white card. Second of all, like, no, majority of men are dismissed, or unless you have power or property or money, most men are dismissed.
Well, that's what I was saying to my therapist today, because it really has rubbed me raw, and I think there's a frustration for men that there's this attitude of if you're a white man, you must have all this privilege.
Correct.
And I think that if you're in the world that Nice travels in, or I don't have power. I may have things that happen to me on a daily basis that don't happen to Harry. There's differences. Mm-hmm. I think that white privilege does exist. I think that there is, you know, you and I have two totally different mentalities when we get pulled over by the police.
Yeah. You're like, a friend.
Right. Oh, hey, buddy, I love you.
I'm going to record him.
You're like, oh, shit, I'm going to die. Like, I think there are definitely those things. But at the same time, what we've grown up with the over-promotion of female success. We need to counterbalance this. And I think that at certain points that has come at the cost of men. And I think we are now in territory where the majority of men across the world are not working in jobs that fulfill them. They have no purpose. And the male species in particular has a conquering attitude. I'm working on a podcast project where it's men and women talking about their career arc, how they became successful, how they got to where they're at. And the women that get interviewed talk about things in much more emotional terms, much more humble terms. Mm-hmm. And the men talk about things and I conquered that. There's these sex differences that we're not even allowed to have these conversations out loud about, you know, and the people who dare talk to a male audience then, you know, I wrote 12 Rules of Life. Okay, here's 1,500 hit pieces about what an alt-right piece of shit you are. Mm-hmm. Or I'm a young dude who likes to watch Joe Rogan talk about hunting. Okay, here's 15 New York Times articles about how he's connected to, you know, Richard Spencer. And he's a Nazi troll. Like, the dude's a socialist. Like, I just think there is a feeling amongst men of being left behind, and nobody's reaching out, and the people who do reach out get their hands slapped, and that just feeds the frustration. And we don't have the social connection that we used to have. We don't have people engaged in faith communities like we did. We don't have people engaged in a bunch of different activity. Like, men used to go to the Masons, and they'd have shared projects and build community projects. Men don't do that. They play video games. They find community online. They escape intimacy by, instead of going out and trying to better yourself to get yourself a girlfriend, you throw dollars at some girl who has who you can pay $30 a month and then pretend that's your girlfriend. Or the unseen pandemic in this country that is going to be talked about soon because it's untenable are the amount of wives that are in therapy on a daily basis talking to therapists across this nation going, I'm ready and willing, and my husband would rather watch porn. You laugh, but every fucking woman listening to this podcast just started shaking her head. And if you are a man that got mad at me for saying that, you better take a look at your behavior, because that's not real intimacy. And I think that it just got real quiet, real awkward in here.
Well, like a lot of that.
Oh. But I think what we have done with the internet as men, we have taken that masculine attitude of conquering, put it into trolling, and put it into easy outs for intimacy and connection. And we have neglected real life. And so now women are sitting there going, I mean, this is Jordan Peterson's message. It's like, I'm trying to make men better. I'm not anti-female. I'm trying to make men better partners for women. Yep. You know, you shouldn't watch as much porn as you do. You shouldn't have loud, aggressive sex with your wife and treat her like she's property. These are not 2D characters you're watching on the screen.
But 2D characters are better.
Yeah, anime titties.
They're quiet.
If you're paying a cam girl, or if you're sending women things off of their wish list, because, and you're using that as an avenue for fake intimacy, you should stop it.
I have a complaint about that.
All right.
There's so much, I shit you not, so much DDLG, daddy, daughter, little girl, pay me money and I'll fucking give you. I'm like, listen, I'm like, you are at least a 3 out of 10. You don't demand money for me to treat you like a sub like that.
It's ruining women too. It is making women go, well, if I can't find a decent guy, I should just join a soul-robbing sugar baby website.
Tinder, right? You're on Tinder, right?
I'm not, no.
No.
I'm banned from Twitter.
Okay, but when we were swiping, how many girls said, as you see in the title, DDLG, or like sub, or like I'm a brat, or something in the profile?
Oh, because yeah.
They're instigating the dominance that men used to give them, where it's like, I'll treat you like, well, I'll take you out to eat, I'll take you out to the movie, I'll pay for you, and I'll do this stuff.
Just Google monetary domination.
Yeah. Findom, yeah.
Financial domination.
Go on.
Oh, all right. You said a lot. There's a lot to unpack there. One, I think these communities of guys doing different things do exist. Just like there in Discord, we do, instead of getting together and playing basketball and doing it and hanging out, we get together in team sport and play paladins.
Let me clarify. I'm not saying that these things are bad. We have community and it's been a great blessing in my life. But if you like, online community is junk food. It's fast food. At some point, you have to eat your vegetables and have a face-to-face conversation with another human being.
Oh, yeah. Of course. You can have meetups, and it's great for like that. Just like, but we also have got, there's maker spaces where people get together and make different things. There's people who are out there that are all reaching out there and wanting that intimacy and pulling that back into back into their lives. But the first great meme war, Gamergate, was because those institutions were under attack. The one thing that the guys had, those things became under attack.
No, and I get that. I think that's like, it's like, why does girls in Boy Scouts ruffle men so much?
It doesn't.
Yeah, it does. If you just go ask most men, do you think girls should be allowed in Boy Scouts? 90% of men will say no.
All right, I've talked to like 5 Eagle Scouts and none of them gave a damn.
I'm telling you, it's not about the people who are involved in the organization. It's the general opinion.
Oh, okay.
And it's a counter reaction to this notion of you can't have men's clubs, you can't have men's schools, you can't have men, but women can do whatever they want. And it's like I'm trying not to sound like a knuckle dragging Neanderthal, but I think society at large, men, women, babies, people don't understand the alienation, especially of younger guys.
No, they don't.
And that alienation and disconnection leads someone like this to very radical places to replace real intimacy, to replace real community. And it's up to those of us who are healthy or at least able to start building communities to encourage men to walk away from things that, like, I'm not saying, like, don't join online communities or play video games with your friends, or watch, like, that you have to decide, is this a problem in my life that I am no longer engaging in real life? Like, if you are a man who cannot have sex with your wife because you'd rather watch porn, you're sick. Like, I'm saying you need to go to counseling to deal with your intimacy issues.
Correct, but are they sick or are their wives not communicating the sex that they're having? Because a lot of different times you've got someone who wants to interact and go into sex, they're not communicating. Like, a lot of different people is from the one, it's the sexual education in this country is awful. God awful.
Men learn sex
from porn.
Men are brick walls when it comes to their wives. You and I both know this. The very person who knows you best, who is telling you something, you're going, I'm so tired of her nagging me. I just, you know, niece, you've been, you know what I'm talking about.
I don't get nagged, sir.
I don't get nagged either. I do the nagging. Do the nagging. But then I said, like, that sexual conversation to have with your spouse, you know, if you find that your spouse is willing to self-love with pornography, maybe you need to have a conversation. One, try to enjoy it with them, have a sexual conversation,
healthy intimacy with
self-love. Self-loving because they're not getting that exact same pleasure with you. Maybe you should have a better conversation with your sex.
I'm talking about couples who haven't had sex in months or years. And I asked my therapist about this today.
Yeah, but
she said one or two women a day her office every day.
Yes. Like, but
she goes, it's a pandemic.
Yeah. But you say that, right? But we used to laugh at the pandemic of guys who did not get sex from their wives for years.
Mm-hmm.
I know several married men, right, who hasn't had sex with their wife in years.
Sure.
That is a joke that is still said today, like, oh, once you get married, she stops putting out.
It's why Peg Bundy was so funny, because Peg Bundy was begging for it. Now Bundy wouldn't give it to her because it was so counterculturally. It was ironic.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer ironic.
Yeah.
It's now the predominant thing that nobody's talking about. I'm telling you, you are hearing it. You hear things here too. 2 years before everybody talks about it.
Yeah, because they're
telling you it's a real thing.
Because they're getting that self-pleasure, that self-love from themselves, sitting there doing that. You know, that and all that type of entertainment. And that's why they do to these adult cam models like that and buys them for stuff, because that they want to experience an intimacy that they're not getting with their wife. So there's basically, you're right, it is a fast food thing, but I think it's just that unhealthy conversation that is not taking place. And they're having that conversation with their therapist, not a couple therapist, not a sex therapist, that will help them get that intimacy. There are people out there that will help bring that intimacy back into their lives.
Yeah, I'm saying that it needs to be addressed, but I think there are tremendous, like, I think that I have personally never heard anybody push back on the use of porn except for, like, weird Christian people, right?
Yeah.
Like, and now some red pill people are starting to kind of say this stuff too. It really, for me, started to hit home over the last few months of, like, in talking to multiple female friends. Like, if you're a guy that can have conversation with your married female friends about these things, start asking around. I guarantee you'll go, holy shit. You know, I think that it is something that's not being talked about. And I think for guys our generation, there's so much of the internet that we got started at 13, 12 or 13 with so many different things. If it's just like James said early on, he illustrated it perfectly. If my dad hadn't done this, if my dad hadn't had a hearing and vision issue, I think we have had so many, we have had, as millennials of both sexes, our minds have been connected to this hose of humanity that has been, I think it's just it's fucked with our notion of what is healthy and what isn't.
Well, there's too much. I'll put it this way:
it's
too
like
much
I should,
expectations, right?
Yeah. Right.
So, like when I look at the women that have like multiple social medias, like I said, with the daddy daughter little girl thing, or like the pay pig shit, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I see that all over on Facebook, on Twitter. I see this all on social media. This is what they want. They're not wanting a full-on commitment relationship like they would, like, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. They're substituting that commitment with mm-hmm. essentially a form of prostitution from the man. I'm paying you money and you kind of enact certain things. It'll be normal in like a relationship. But then on the other spectrum, you have men here that's like, you know, I'm not really going to get off unless I can, like, you know, like stuff her in a washer and dryer and do some weird fucking like kinky shit with like robes and like beat her with candles or some shit. You know, some ridiculous high expectation of like pornography.
After 30 years of porn use, you've turned women into an object for personal gratification,
yeah,
and you're treating your wife in a way that is unloving
and
terrible.
Like, even the realist in me is like, okay, like even if you found a woman that's able to do like all these like really dark fetish things you want to do, you're not going to last more than 10 seconds, dog. she's just going to be pissed. Because like when you idolize and fetishize sex to that degree where you're substituting your intimacy for aggressive sex like that, when you actually do get it, like your brain just overdrives into it. And then at that point you ruin your relationship anyway because now you're like two pump chump, dude.
Correct. Yeah. Then you're laying there flaccid, weak, and turnabout's fair play. So when you get bent over, that's all you.
I just like all of this. Like I've really kind of been thinking about my own personal use of the internet in every area and how I relate to people in every area. And, you know, for me thinking about porn, it's been something that I'm actually like, I realize now I'm participating in that process. And I'll tell you what it really was. And I really pissed off a female friend when I explained this. And so I'm told you in the group chat, I'm going to piss everybody off. I was watching one and the girl had cut marks on her arm. And empathy hit me like a bolt of lightning. And I said, and something in my brain just said, what if this action is emotional cutting and you're participating in it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, that's presumptive.
Correct.
But it never occurred to me that this is a cycle that I'm involved in because it's like watching television. It's 2D figures. It's instead of making a choice that I am, as a consumer, encouraging the creation of something that may be harmful to other people. And so it made me go, ooh. But, you know, and I know libertarians are all really pushing sex work right now. Well, and I'll let you comment on this in just a moment. But at the end of the day, sex work should be legal. There should be no laws against it. People should be allowed to live their lives as they want. I'm not going to shame somebody for that. I'm not going to cast guilt on them,
mm-hmm.
you know, because there's a lot of stuff that I do that like we just have to live in a world of acceptance and connection. And treat each other like with dignity and respect, no matter what your choice is and what you do, right? But I'm not on the promote sex train as like the first platform blank. You know what I mean? Like I just don't I don't find it to be a healthy line of work, and so I'm not out there pushing that. And so like that experience for me a few months ago kind of made me go, this isn't just, and it was getting a little too far. It was getting a little too much, like, I'm too comfortable in this space. I don't have to go out and date. I don't have to go. Like, I want a healthy relationship with a woman. And it's going to be more difficult if I like this more than I like them. Because I'm looking at exactly what I like and exactly what pushes my buttons. And that's probably not who I'm going to get married to. And I think a lot of guys have gotten too far away with this. And I think it is... I'm bringing it up because it is the most button pushing, thought provoking use of the internet in every man's life that you need to think about. Are you substituting online culture for real connection with other people? And I think that when we look at a guy like this, are we perpetuating a system that allows a man off the hook to go so far that he will be dive so deep into his mania that he will go murder 50 people because he thinks he will be some sort of weird hero to people? You know, what are the choices that we are making every single day on the internet as we click on news stories, as we give our attention to things? What are we? What world are we choosing, and are we being intentional about choosing the world that we want to see? Because the reality is I can do nothing to go and stop more people from killing somebody else other than what I do on this program when I talk to you, or intervening in the friends in the lives of maybe the 15 friends that I have that level of intimacy with. I cannot go to New Zealand and save these people's lives. The cops took 36 minutes to get to them to save their life. Like, you cannot outsource this stuff. All you can do is choose to understand your values and choose to live those out on a daily basis. And so I bring up porn because I really want to push people to think about how they engage with the world. Are you living on a fast food diet of cheap and easy connection with people, or are and avoiding real intimacy? So that's what I'm trying to say.
I see what you're saying. All right. One, stop watching free porn, pay for your porn. Because because you see that and you put that what you believe you those things are like that person that is doing that is a small business owner, and they both are getting paid.
I'm just laughing because Michael Rowe goes, but talking to real people is harder work than on the internet.
It's not. Talking to people on the internet is hard work. To get some actual intimacy on the internet, it's very, very hard. Going up to a random stranger up into a bar and saying, hey, what's up? I find that so – I'm actually more interactive in person than I am online. Online, I am a complete introvert. I do not like talking to people. Mm-hmm. The other thing with sex workers is that – a lot of them, it's a billion-dollar industry that no one wants to talk about, and that each one of those cam girls are all small businesses. They're all getting paid. No one's doing it because that's their last ditch ever. They do that because a lot of them do it because they want to do it.
Belle Daphne's up to $100,000 a month when she does her stupid little Hago face. So, yeah. You know, she's making bank. I mean, that's a lot. Think about it.
Right.
This woman gets $100,000 a month just to make anime faces because it turns you on.
Correct. Yeah. And the thing is, the idea that you can get desensitized to porn is like, what? Are you desensitized to violence because you watch violent video games, stuff like that? No. If you saw actual freaking violence in front of you, it would shock the crap out of you. Just, you know, the people who are possibly maybe desensitized sex is people who do it as a living. This is, oh no, oh, yep, just gonna go over there, fluff this person real quick, and then tape this this anal scene. That person's probably desensitized.
I mean, I get desensitized because I know Paul is probably watching this right now. I get desensitized every time we play Paladins, right? That's our community, and we play video games. Every time you pick freaking Furia, dude, I swear to God, dude, like, I love you a little bit less. It's like, I can't get heals when I need heals. There, I said it right here. So anybody listening to this, why don't you PM Paul, tell him to pick a real healer, like an actual healer, not somebody you just want to shoot shit with. Pick a real healer. I'll see you tonight.
What? It seems like a good time for me to go to the bathroom. I went to the restroom, and I missed a lot, apparently.
Well, no, we're talking about community. Harry, myself, even Reinhold, Paul, like we'll play like video games at night, right? And like, well, in the channel, sometimes we get like, Donovan or some other people kind of come in and play. But, it's like a normal social, it's like if you were playing basketball, right?
Sure.
And like, you know, like normally you play with your friends, like you'll shit talk with your friends, right?
Men don't do what women do, which is sit around and talk about things and feelings. And like, men have to have a shared thing that they're working on for us to bond. Like,
yes.
Harry and I are never really going to go out to dinner, just he and I sitting there talking to each other.
We went to lunch. Yeah.
We did, yeah.
Yeah, but lunch is different. Like, but like Harry, I call Harry up on a Thursday and I go, hey, you want to get dinner? And then he goes, sure. And then we go out to dinner for 2 hours and talk about our feel. Like, guys don't do that. Like, Rupert and I get together and watch Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And I type out on his Twitter what he wants me to, like, I type for him because he's dyslexic. It's all him saying it, but it's me typing it. The main, Rupert could do that, but the main reason is that Rupert and I want to maintain that connection. And so every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, we talk for an hour. Because we, it's a shared thing. Mm-hmm. Like, men don't connect in the same way that women connect.
True.
Like, they have to have a shared thing. So online community is good. Like, I'm not saying that any of that is bad. Are things getting too far? Like, are you looking at your life feeling a certain way, feeling depressed, and then you don't realize it?
Correct. And that's the one thing that a lot of wives don't, some people don't understand when they're trying to bond with their significant other who is possibly male or just does this, is that if you want to know about his feelings, sit down, play the video game with him, and start asking him questions.
Distract his dumb ass.
Right. While he's doing there, like, it's hard for even myself, you know how awesome I am to sit down with my wife.
Emotionally
and
mature.
Right.
Right.
To sit down and really talk to my wife about my feelings. One, because when I really start on it, I can show the depth of my feelings to her, and it kind of freaks her out sometimes. So we like to do projects, you know, like, hey, help me with this project and we can talk and bond on it. Like right now, I'm helping her get her technician's ham radio license. I bought a bunch of radios. I'm going to start doing it at the Liberty and Chill meetups and forcing everyone to get their ham radio operator license.
Yeah. I find that women are usually scared of male feelings, or maybe I just have too many. I know, James, you and I are on the opposite end, like, of I have too much empathy and feelings and you have none.
Well, no, like, I'll be at home, right? And, like, because, like, he's doing, like, things with his, like, wife, he'll go do ham radio, right? But, like, it's the opposite for me. Because, like, people will come in the room, like, doors open. It's like, it's goddamn 3 a.m. and you're just going, over and over again in the microphone. Like, she's like, are those your friends? Because, like, the shit that's coming out of your guys' mouth right now is just fucking ridiculous. It's 3 a.m, we're trying to sleep, waking everybody up. And, like, literally, like, I'll, like, be hunched over, like a goblin in the dark, just shooting people. And she's like, you know, but that's just a communication breakdown because she likes to play video games, but she likes things like Pokemon, right? So she likes these, you know, kind of go as you go, Harvest Moon.
Yeah.
So, like, she's like, oh, I like it. This is when we started dating. She's like, oh, I like it. You're a gamer. Then, like, after, like, the first day, she's like, oh, holy shit. And she's like, on 16 hours of this dude's just, like, hanging in his boxers, fucking killing dragons and shit, screaming, like, you know, slurs in the microphone.
What a fulfilling relationship you must have.
Yeah. So, like, I'm too much autism for her sometimes.
Right.
So, you know, it's like she'll come in 3 a.m, I'll be playing with them, and, like, we say, like, some ridiculous stuff, and, like, there sometime I'll, like, screech, and Paul will be, like, screaming yeet, like loud, so you hear the house, like, yeet, yeet. And she comes in and she's like, what the fuck are you guys doing, dude? But it's a miscommunication. Even if you do like the same things, there can be different levels of, like, enjoyment. So, like, I use that as an example because she likes video games, I like video games. Well, she's a here, I'm a here.
Men take it too far sometimes.
I mean, I'm not taking it too far. I just get more into it. Like I said, she does, like, Harvest Moon. She does, like, she's got the cat game she plays. She does the even Pokemon, right? Like, when we started talking about Pokemon, this is the level of it. She's like, yeah, you know, like, I started with, like, Squirtle. I'm like, you know, the issue with Squirtle is his IV and EV is really kind of bad. But if you want to min-max, you know, you definitely need to get an Alakazam because his speed stat is basically 3 times higher than everyone else with a higher percent of critical chance. So his EV level and IV levels are much better, and it's kind of like,
but I like the way Jigglypuff looks.
It's like, but
okay, all right, I'm cutting this off. What I was about to say is that I think that, like, men sometimes don't feel comfortable sharing their feelings with women or anybody, really, for that matter. Like, I Brené Brown is one of my heroes. If you if you're man, woman, they be whatever, mittens. Like, go read The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown. Short book, life-changing book, really great.
Yeah.
I like a lot of her work. And so she on Audible, there's this great talk, I think, called The Power of Vulnerability. I've listened to it maybe a dozen times. And there's this one point where a guy walks up and just go ahead, man. Just belch. Do it.
Sorry, I have respect for the people in the kingdom.
But this guy walks up to her and goes, that was a great talk about vulnerability, and my wife and daughters are your biggest fans. Those three women right there that just stood in line for an hour to have you sign their book, that just talk about vulnerability and openness and sharing, and they would rather see me die on my white horse than fall off. And she goes on to talk about male vulnerability and how hard it is for men to open up, especially to women, because women don't allow men to be vulnerable. Because as a guy who is very comfortable talking about my feelings, it can be a little much for women because they're used to guys who don't talk.
Right.
And I have found in dating, this is a bit too much learned behavior that I'm trying to get over, that I talked a little bit about today in therapy, that as a guy, when I open up and I share, the woman that I'm talking to stops talking to me within a week.
Mm. Do you think maybe you're oversharing?
Well, I used to, for sure, mm-hmm. for sure. Mm-hmm. Not as much anymore, mm-hmm. but...
Well, do you think, possibly, right? Like, I don't know, like, your childhood that much, right?
Yeah.
But do you think perhaps you didn't develop, like, sort of social skills that allows you to do that? Like, I mean, I'm autistic as shit, dude, but, like...
James Neese just call me autistic, Harry? It's over for me. Well, I'm going to hang myself
after
this.
Well, like, even then, like, I never... Like, I had a problem with intimacy, right? But it was a different level of intimacy.
Right.
Like, it was super easy for me to go, like, you know, do the Jacksonville trip and just be like, oh, here's a thought. Let's do it. You know, it's super easy to do. But it was always super hard for me to, like, when in a relationship, right, to kind of just see on the same level in a lot of different things because, like, I like to be left alone a lot of the times.
Right.
So, like, that was an issue. But, you know, just kind of running the gamut with, like, the Tinder, you know, back then it was, like, you know, plenty of fish or whatever. Just running that gamut of just, like, oh, here's another one. Oh, here's another. Oh, super easy because I'm introverted.
No, you know, in Tommy Boy, where they're in the restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and Greg identified this, and he was so right. He goes, you know, when he's like, look at this little bread, and I love it, and I pet it, and I squeeze it, and then I, like, he goes, that's you with a woman. Well, and so I've had to learn over time to, like, keep that stuff kind of hidden back. But in talking to other guys, I do think that is not uncommon. There is a little bit of, I think we could use a little bit more help from the female race.
Well, no, it's like, the reason I asked the question, right, is like in high school, like let's use high school, that's the biggest social learning curve you have is
for
in
sure.
high school.
Oh,
right,
yes.
Right? Like were you constantly, I mean, like there's always the guy that has like tons of girls around him, but he never gets laid, right? They're always there, but they never get laid. Was that a situation with you? You never developed that, like, I'm able to seal a deal, I'm able to like get straight to the, I'm not able to be bull.
Yeah, I mean, not anymore, but sex has never been, like, I'm not anti-sex, but it was never, like, in high school a motivator for me.
No,
like, I just, like, my value system was never, like, I look at a female for sex. Like, there was never a deal in high school, it just wasn't even a thought to me.
Well, I mean, like, I'm not saying like it's because it has to be the most important thing. Usually right. it's there's a mentality that goes with it that I'm able to, from the moment I talk to a girl to basically the end game, like I'm, you know, I'm in bed with her or something, you know, like that. I'm able to comfortably be able to do that.
Yeah, no, I am not comfortable with any of that process.
So, I mean, would that be like an inhibitor, whereas like since you weren't comfortable with that process in your younger development years of basically just having the confidence to basically like any woman here I can talk to, get her to come over and stuff like that.
If I look at you, like you should get it, right?
Yeah. It's,
like if I stare at you for a long time, no.
Are you substituting that maybe by an emotional appeal as opposed to like a physical aggressive appeal?
Yeah, no, I'm not comfortable with physical aggressiveness in any way.
Or it's like,
not at all.
Like, hey, let me just be, the best way to put it is like really upfront.
I'll go on 10 dates with a girl before I even get in her space.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll ask, like, it's just not who I am. It's not part of me. It's like, it's an awkwardness thing. Like and it is that way with most people. I'm not an aggressive person.
Well, yeah, that might also be an issue. And sometimes because some people like people to be assertive. They like people to make the first move. You know? So if like I'm a woman and I'm just like, you know, my type of guy, like I like him to, you know, just be comfortable, assertive, being able to like, you know, be spontaneous, get stuff done. But I meet you and like you're on like this is like date number 4 and we're talking about your cats. You know what I mean? It's kind of like
and we've had deep, meaningful conversation about our traumas, and we've had lots of fun. But they're going, is this guy going to kiss me or not?
Yeah, but like that could be an issue, right? And I think that's a communication issue between men and women and certain things.
Sure,
someone wants something, but they're not communicating. It's not like, you know, like, hey,
bang me in the back of this Wendy's bathroom because I'm fucking into that and you're hot. You know, it's just like.
I am very much an awkward Midwestern. Like, I am David Letterman internally, especially with women that I like. Like, it's very much a nervous thing. Like, I certainly have learned over the last, like, 3 or 4 years. Divorce really, like, propels you into new territory, and it certainly did with me. But growing up, it was always like the idea that you would touch a woman without her, like kissing someone without their permission seems like a violation.
I mean,
like, it just, I don't know. And I know that it's not, but to me, it's just like that Midwestern attitude of awkwardness, and I've always liked my personal space, and so I just assume others do too.
Well, I mean, I'm less of that now. I'm like 30 something, but like in like my teen years and 20, yeah, I was definitely more assertive, just to kind of just right. do what I want to do. Now I'm just kind of like, I don't really care, dude. I'm just going to play my video games. I don't really care what we do. But you know, like
that low T
during that those college years, you know, where I'm constantly like at a college party, I'm just constantly like high off my ass. I mean, like, it was literally just, you know, high energy all the time.
Right.
Not so much anymore, but maybe like the issue, like for some guys in certain instances, like they never had that, you know, development period in the years for unknown reasons. It could be, you know, just you weren't interested in it, all the way up to being like, you know, like, well, I'm just unlikable.
No, that's it's more that than interest. No, like it was never a lack of interest in sex. It was always more like, who is going to like me? Mm. And that's why I still go to therapy. Like I think I'm never, and I've found this to be like, I work with a lot of comedians, I work with a lot of broadcasters, I work with a lot of people in the media eye. I am always so surprised to find some of the most successful people completely confused that anybody likes them. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a life that if I went back and told my 17-year-old self the life that I have now, he would go, get the fuck out of here, right? Mm-hmm. But I feel so inadequate in every area of my life all the time. And I think, I don't think that that's abnormal. I think so many people feel that all the time. And I don't think that they're comfortable saying that. I'm very uncomfortable saying this because, oh, you look weak. You're weak. You can't, like, you can't fuck as many chicks as niece. Like, your value as a man isn't as, I don't give a fuck at this point. Like, at this point, if you're 2 hours in, like, you're sticking with us. Like, I think that
I think I'm awesome.
Feeling, right, feeling inadequate. Or that imposter syndrome where I'm a fraud and everybody's going to figure it out soon enough. Or it doesn't matter how I look at the downloads and we're at a certain level.
Are you a risk taker?
Act as if we're impossible to fail.
Yeah, are you a risk taker? Like that?
That's my mantra.
Like if I
can't fail.
Do you think I'm a risk taker? I don't.
No, you're not.
Okay, why?
You know, I don't know. You play it safe, and a lot of the times you're right to play it safe. Mm-hmm. But
I will take
at least from what I'm seeing. I'm sorry.
I will take informed risks.
Like, I'm not a risk taker.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I can be impulsive, but I'm not a risk taker. See, like, I don't. How do you define it?
If I were to be like, okay, let's say we get 2 weeks off work. Terry's off work for 2 weeks. You're off work for 2 weeks. And I'm like, you know, fuck it. You want to go to Colorado? We'll just get high in Colorado. There's no pressure there. It's legal in Colorado. We just get high. We just do whatever the fuck we want in Colorado.
No, I wouldn't be comfortable being out of control like that.
But I think that's probably what you need in certain instances. Sure. Right? Like, if your issue is like, I'm feeling inadequate sometimes, and my issue is like, I'm having issues in this manner where like things aren't really clicking with me the way I want them to click with me, and stuff you're doing, like you're like 30 something years old, it's not working, do some risky stuff that normally you wouldn't do.
Right.
I know you don't drink and I know you don't do that, but that's something you don't do. We can go to a state where like you're not going to get in trouble for it just to do that.
It's not a matter of being.
Well, I think it is.
It's not a matter of I'm going to get in trouble. It's a matter of
you don't want to lose control. But losing control is good sometimes.
I feel like I'm doing a lot of important things that I'm dedicated to, and to lose focus from that is is irresponsible.
I mean, but that's the point of a vacation. There's no point in a vacation, right? These vacations, if you get one, is to sit here on the couch and just do the same thing you do during your average work week.
How did this become niece becoming my therapist?
I don't know.
Where have we gone?
But I would
therapy chat right here.
I would.
I like it.
If that's my issue, if your issues are. I feel like I'm inadequate in these things, and I'm like having issues connecting with people outside, just like splurging on like, you know, emotional drivel. It's like, why not, you know, have a week to yourself? We'll go to the electric course. We'll go to Burning Man, and no one there knows you. There's no social pressure there. You just do whatever you want to do for like, just lose yourself for like a week.
I feel like I'd be so annoyed though. I feel like I'd be so uncomfortable and annoyed and
but
like
that's a mental block.
Feeling when gross.
Once your phone lost power,
all right,
time became nothingness. you would just kind of ease into it.
Yeah,
but I think it's like you think you're going to get annoyed because you're not in the situation currently. You're thinking like, oh, it's just going to be loud. And there's people all up in my face, but like. Everybody's like that the first time in any sort of like situation that's kind of like wild and chaotic. It's like, holy shit, what the fuck is going on right. here, right? Mm-hmm. But as you kind of get into it, like hour goes by, 2 hours, 3 hours, you get into it, like it's probably healthy for you to do that because human beings are not meant to be ordered. Like we try to order right. things all the time, but we're really, essentially chaotic. We don't know what tomorrow's going to bring and next hour's going to bring.
I think time pressure or time anxiety has been a tremendous – it's a new thing for the human brain. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. that's why I think people like Joe Rogan's podcast. Because he's not sitting there looking at any kind of broadcast clock. He's just talking to a dude or a woman, and they're just having a conversation. And, like, if it goes 2 hours ago, like, people all the time sit here and go, and I've tried to order the podcast a little bit, but, like, my plans all kind of went out the window for this because it's just like we're having a conversation and, you know, it's like 2 hours in. And if I were a responsible broadcaster, these would be an hour or 90 minutes at most, and I just go, people really like just hearing conversation that isn't beholden to time because they're so fucking tired of time anxiety.
If you really were worried about time, you'd try to get us on an AM or FM station.
Oh,
to
for
make
sure.
Us to, that would force us to
I would
on
sell
time.
Advertisements. I would be so much more professional than I am. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know how to do it. I've worked in radio for a decade of my 15-year career. Like, I know how to run a radio show. But, like, this is fun for me.
I mean, I'm more productive in chaos. Like,
right.
Like, he'll be fucking, like, sleeping and he'll wake up. I have, like, 30 tickets done, dude. Like, and when it's chaos and I'm kind of just doing my own thing, I'm more productive.
If I don't go to bed Sunday night with my sheets washed, my laundry folded, put it away, my dishes done, like, I go crazy through the week.
He just gets me what I want. I don't want emails. Mm-hmm. I don't want phone calls. I just want everything to work.
Right.
I want to go downtown.
Niece works for Harry now, by the way.
Drink my coffee, sit in my ivory tower,
right.
and everything be smooth.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
While I'm sitting there, like, I walk around, I'm like, yo, what's up? What's up? Hey, it's your boy Niece. 2 a.m, what's up? You want some stuff? Got your stuff. But it's like that, like the chaos of it, right? And like just being able to, yeah, it sucks if I had to come in like 9 and 5 because I like to do things on like spurts where like, yeah, I'll do a normal day, but then I'll do a burst at the end of the day where everything right. gets shut down. They were done. Like I like these bursts where I'm able to do that because for me, I judge my metrics and my goals and my ability to perform on basically just overwhelming firepower. So like I come in with like, you know, it might be like a couple trickle shots, but eventually the nuke is coming in and I'll bring the nuke. And he's seen one day we did a migration and like everybody's like, holy shit, Niece came in and like changed everything overnight and he didn't know how to handle because like I work like that. You know, I'm like, well, we told him, you know, 2 weeks we're going to do this, but we
so
did.
So irresponsible
it.
Not to communicate with your team members.
We did. I did.
Yeah, okay. We did. It's just that
they forgot.
They forgot, and they require a little bit more hand holding.
Uh-huh.
We need to walk them into the light and then push them off the cliff.
See, that's where like I need people like Niece. Mm-hmm. I'm so people focused that I don't think about like I think about people's feelings and I think about people's like their productivity. Like I'm very outwardly focused with people where it's like I need somebody like Niece who doesn't give up. Like I just need you to build the infrastructure and not care about like here's how it's going to work. Like
why do you think I want him?
Yeah, exactly.
Harry's worried about. He's like, you know, he's like, well, they're gonna be mad at us, dude. They're mad. I'm like, I don't care. Fucking hate me, dog. I'm gonna go.
Right.
I want to go get some hot dogs. What's up?
Right. Yeah. What's up? Right. So like, he gets me what I want. So like, because he gets it, I know I don't have to worry about and double check it that much on the technical end, and I could just go over and like people please and smooth things over and talk about it, blah 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 blah, and make everybody happy.
Right.
You know. That's what I do.
Yeah, and people are like, what, those memes are not safe for work, niece. I don't care.
I gotta censor him sometimes.
How much of like the early shit posting and the raids and like how much of that mentality adds into you just not is your brain just hardwired not to think about, not that you maybe not think, you don't think about how other people are gonna react, but it's like you don't have this, you've just lost the ability to care. Well, it's been trained out of you.
It's not the ability to care. It's just a lot of people want to be people focused, right? But like, if everybody's people focused all the time, you don't get stuff done in a timely manner,
right?
It's like there's things that have to be done. Like even if it's not work, it's just a normal social situation. There has to be someone that's willing to essentially, but just fall on the sword here.
Right.
For example, like let's just go. Fuck, I don't care if like something bad happens. I don't care if I get yelled at. I don't care if I get in trouble. It just needs to go.
Yeah.
There has to be at least a couple of these people in each, you know, either group of friends, a workplace environment, a community situation. There always has to be those people, because if you just leave everybody to be like, you know, the B-type personality where it's like, yeah, no, it's going to be your friend. You know, we'll talk things out. We'll get things working together. It seems great. You're feeling great. I'm feeling great.
Right.
You know, because he asked me a question like, how do you like it? And I couldn't answer that question, you know, because he wants an emotional response. And I'm like, I'm just fucking destroying shit, dude. You know,
right.
It's like, I'm just wrecking stuff right now. but these people are important because they met A types mesh with B types. B types need an A type, and A types need B types, or A types to kind of just lose focus and just kind of overdrive things to a point.
I feel like you're both Type A.
What?
He's not Type A.
I'm not Type A.
No. Really?
No, he's out at 5, dude. I think he's like, I'm going home.
Going home. Leaving.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll do meetings. It's like, it's not like, you know, it's pretty Type B. It's kind of like just let them do their own stuff. I think he's only Type A when it's like, I'm going to give them this shit right here. And it's like, no, do that. Don't give them that shit. And I'm like, oh. I'm like, yeah, looks good, you know.
I don't want to be yelled at. That's when I'm Type A.
Okay.
Yep.
That could get me yelled at.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be yelled at.
Mm-hmm.
It's that nice blending. It's another reason why you'll watch the most successful San Francisco startup in that like softy SJW like San Francisco culture. A lot of them, those companies really don't get successful and start really making a lot of money until they leave that and go to somewhere like in Indiana and pick up someone like a niece, something like that. And you really start like really kicking ass.
Right.
You know, a lot of those people will hate that person, but understand that it's a necessary evil that you need to introduce to get it the way you need it. We've got a factory like that where everyone dislikes this manager that runs this place, but he's such a necessary evil.
Right.
That without him, this would be nothing would work.
That's sort of how Mittens is here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
remember when I told our 80% male audience that porn's bad?
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine how much I don't give a fuck.
Well, let me tell you this. The only porn I've ever seen that's bad is when I'm just, you know, when I was on Hentai Haven, God bless it, see you in heaven, is when like I see that tag, ugly bastard, right? Holy shit. Like, way to ruin that, dude.
What?
Ugly bastard.
What's that?
Ugly bastards is a category in hentai where they have like a really attractive woman as like the focal point, but the Japanese creators want the woman to be a focal point. So when they're like their fucked up mind, they'll make the woman the focal point. We'll make the male character this disgusting, fat, ugly, like snorting, like spitting, snorting, slobbering dude, and he just pounds the shit out of the wall. You know what I mean? So he's like, oh, it's like
that's kind of what the media. Let's circle back and start wrapping this up. Yeah. So, like, that's sort of what the media is doing to the 4chan culture, the meme culture. That like everything's alt right. Everything like the idea that we talked about last episode, where Joe Rogan and all these YouTube accounts are all connected and all alt right. It like. To me, the idea that a person goes and kills 50 people because he looked at too many memes is ridiculous.
Yes.
Like, it's such a confluence of so many different events, starting with bad brain chemistry, you know, and starting with a lack of access to mental health care and mm-hmm. a lack of a culture that allows this man to go get health care and feels comfortable with it, where like I think that's like if we're going to change it, it really has to start there. It really has to start with you can't ban, like they go on in this in the daily episode to talk about. Did I close it out? They basically go on to talk about how it's the algorithm's fault. How you start watching Kara Swisher from Recode Media, who's the gatekeeper of censorship now. This tech journalist who's talking to Susan Wojcik of Google, who runs YouTube. You know, my 13-year-old son was watching a Ben Shapiro video. That's just a gateway to white supremacy. Oh, you mean the Orthodox Jew with the yarmulke on his head is mm-hmm. a gateway to Hitler? The literally number one troll for the target for the alt-right in 2016, Ben Shapiro, that guy is yep. a gateway to the alt-right. It literally mm-hmm. has become a way to link any political opponent to people who do bad things in tangential connections. And so they just say, well, it's YouTube's fault because you start watching a Paul Joseph Watson video, or he's like, you start watching a history video and then you end up at Alex Jones and then you're shooting up a mosque. It's like, it's so like, I think any adult that looks at that and thinks that, I just can't believe that there are adults so daft that they think that a person watching a YouTube video will be spurred on to go and, like, the amount of things that are wrong with this person's brain. Mm-hmm. It's not the gun. It's not the YouTube. He would be radicalized by Islam. He would be radicalized by, you know, Christian fundamentalism. He'd be radicalized by anything that gave him meaning because he's a fucked up individual.
Correct.
You know, it's just insane
yeah.
to me.
Yeah.
He
could put a clown costume on and just chop people up in his basement.
Right.
Okay. What internet did, you know, all these other people start like if you watch Investigation Discovery and Evil Lives Here, what internet troll does some of these people from the 80s get from? Okay.
Right.
The thing is like, and then that narrative that this rabbit hole is getting pushed. Vice just did a whole video on ContraPoints. I love Natalie Wynn's videos of ContraPoints.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing, get it, jump into some of these videos, get the mouthfeel, and they try to pivot, and this is like, well, saying that Natalie puts these videos up there too, so if they watch a bench video on a topic, they'll find these other arguments for ContraPoints to try to drag them from the right to the middle. And Natalie even said that in the video, but to me, when you watch a ContraPoints video, it's just more of a little bit more, it's someone from a different perspective talking about the same different type of subject. And mostly, she did a great job of, one, taking apart the left and taking apart the alt-right, which is technically the real left. But based on the argument, like the whole degeneracy of the left that people talk about that the alt-right hates, you know, like right. hate gays, stuff like that. You know what I mean? And how that's not part of Western culture. Wrong, you know, obviously, you start Western culture at the 1800s in the Victorian era.
Right.
You didn't go back any further of quote unquote Western culture when, you know, like, you know, dressing in women's clothing and doing all this other gay stuff didn't start.
Right. It's a lot of people trying to solve problems that aren't their business with terms they don't understand, that they're mm-hmm. manipulating the language to. It's just basic propaganda. Like, let's just manipulate the language correct. Until it means what we want it to mean,
mm-hmm.
repeat it over and over and over and over. You know, you just listen, like I was listening to the ABC News podcast, which was pretty fair. Like a lot of this stuff has been fair, but like the narrative is not his mental health. The narrative is not like what were his real motivations. The narrative is not let's try and understand 4chan in the way that we did tonight. The narrative is white supremacy is spreading and Donald Trump is to blame. And so you go in the podcast, the ABC News podcast, The Guardians of Truth, they say, you know, white supremacy acts of violence are up. They never give you a fact to validate that is true. They just say it.
Right.
And then you hear that 150 times if you watch the CNN or the news about this thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and YouTube is responding in kind. Like, if you search any kind of news topic, it's literally just all the major media outlets now. It's none of the unless you have subscribed to certain channels, you're not going to get a Paul Joseph Watson. You're not going to get, you know, a Tim Pool. You're going to get CNN, BBC, mm-hmm. you know, like...
Yeah, the white supremacist, right. Tim Pool, you know.
And the real, and I wish I had said this earlier in the episode so thousands more could hear it, the idea that people giving alternative information on YouTube leads this person to kill 50 Muslims. Let's say he's directly influenced by Candace Owen. Everything he wrote in that is not a joke. He believes all that. He is telling the truth. He was influenced to kill people because he watched too much Alex Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that's the truth. That's one person. The news on a daily basis perpetuates a system that kills Muslims systematically with drones and has perpetuated a 20-year war against innocent Muslim citizens around the world. And some non-innocent, you know, ISIS and Al-Qaeda, right?
Mm-hmm.
The insanity of thinking that one avenue that produces violence
mm-hmm.
is perverse and wrong, while the other avenue that uses violence is acceptable is insane to me. Illogical.
You mean old media targeting new media?
Old media targeting new media is them trying to get rid of their competition by trying to tie people like Joe Rogan or any of these like this shooter killed 50 Muslims because of the information that they're getting from this YouTube video.
Mm-hmm.
George Bush got his information from the Washington Post, which perpetuates a system that drones and kills innocent children. In the Middle East, Barack Obama perpetuates that. Well, it's acceptable to support Barack Obama, but not Alex Jones.
That's what they did for... in fact, this goes back to like the 90s and probably before. Like, you remember when like Columbine happened, and just because those fucking neets had a bunch of Doom games on their computer, and they had like you know, they were playing Doom and Wolfenstein mm-hmm. and stuff like that, which was like a popular FPS back in the 90s, which almost every kid had that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, oh, like, you know, we were looking to them, they had this Doom stuff, and they basically got the shotgun off Doom, which is a fucking Mossberg. Everybody's got those, dude. Your dad's right. got those, you know, mm-hmm. so it makes no sense. But the media tried to paint that as, you know, these video games and this internet culture caused these kids to shoot up the school, ignoring the fact that this is during the same administration that they went to Ruby Ridge, and the guy's like, hey, I'm not doing anything, bang, 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 and, you know, killed everybody in that house.
Right. Or Waco. Where 48 innocent, how many?
Bombed Kosovo, right?
Yeah.
Right. For no mm-hmm. reason, like, bomb Kosovo for no reason because, like, there's a bunch of people in the Balkans having an argument, like, Kosovo is Serbia. No way, it's not. But then we had, you know, good thing we had Hillary Clinton there to dodge sniper rounds.
Like, the idea that Alex Jones is evil because he denied that Sandy Hook happened for a couple years, and then that caused some insane people to harass parents. None of that's okay.
You would have got harassed anyway.
But somehow that makes him a bigger danger to society than Barack Obama's drone program.
Because that's an easy target. If I pick like some media personality or I pick someone on the internet or some intangible, it's easier for me to demonize an intangible object than to demonize something that has a little bit of power that can fight back.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And it's, everybody's going to legitimize, like, well, you know, it's like, oh, it's terrible. He shot up like 36, 37, 50 Muslims in a mosque. It's like the U.S. military does that in like a weekend, dude. They're like fun. For fun, dude. And it's like, you know, they're out there. I mean, watch some of the videos that came out of Iraq. They were literally blasting in villages, making jokes about it.
Killing people is okay as long as you're doing it in the name of government.
But no, but here's the thing is like, it's almost more, when I look at things that kill like Muslims, like the U.S. government and the guy, the guy with the mosque at least has a legitimate reason to do it.
Mental illness?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or something like that. At least he says he's legitimate. He doesn't like Muslims.
What is Lindsey Graham's excuse?
But, you know, when I look at the military being there and I see like the videos from Iraq, you remember when like they threw the puppy off this cliff and they shot like the villagers and like, it made like the fat Muslim kid like run after a tank and they tried to hit him with mines and the guy with the shotgun that shot through the window. At least the guy that shot and killed the Muslims in there had a reason, you know, even if it's a bad reason, had a reason to do it. The people that are in the military doing that, right, the politicians and stuff, there's no reason at all.
Yeah,
it's just a nihilistic I don't care, you know. Right. At least it makes more sense And it's at least more acceptable to have a reason to do it than just to be like, well, it's just day-to-day operations.
Yeah.
You're a budget line, you know? It's more dehumanizing to be a budget line than for somebody just to be like, well, it's just two factions going to war because of how they believe what they are.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just like, they won't excuse that. Because it's hard to excuse. You can't excuse something like, they can't pin it on the government because the government really doesn't care. It doesn't care what the outcome is. And people like the white supremacists or people like Alex Jones or people anywhere down this list of like, you know, volatile people on the internet, they care. They care when you scream at them. They care, you know?
Right.
But you can't make something that doesn't care.
All right. Well, give us your final thoughts, James Neese.
I think what happens here is like I said, when he made the manifesto, he specifically, it's just funny because the media is going to roll with it because I think the media doesn't understand how to like engage it. When he says like right there in like line number like 17, the reason I use guns, even though I have bombs, even though I have a big ass truck, I could just run through there and kill them, you know, anytime I want to. I can stab them because they're unarmed. They're not going to fight back. I could have done multiple ways. The reason I use guns is because it's immediately going to go on U.S. air channels. They're going to bring up Donald Trump. They're going to bring up guns. And it's going to be played on a 24/7 news cycle. Lo and behold,
yeah,
that's what they're doing.
They're so predictable that even an insane madman has figured out their shtick.
Because they want the ratings from it.
Right.
Okay? And they know it's going to get the ratings. Their corporate masters want that. Their corporate masters, politicians that they pay for, want that. The Democrats or the Republicans are pro gun control. They want this to be another excuse so they can push it. But the madman's like, no, like, I know if I keep pushing it, they eventually do something about it. And they do something about it, so it's going to piss off people even more, and there'll be more of the instances in the future. The reason he did that was because it's going to set off a fuse where this is going to happen more and more, because the media is going to do exactly what he said he was aiming to do, because the media doesn't know better.
Right.
Like, this happened in New Zealand, but this is like hot topic 24/7 cycle news here in the U.S. that they're applying to U.S. politics. Like, you know, you have AOC opening her like claptrap about it. You know, it's like,
right,
this has nothing to do with you. This is New Zealand. Mm-hmm. This happens everywhere else in the world that we just don't report about. The only reason we're reporting about it is because he threw out a manifesto and started naming U.S. politicians on the manifesto.
Yeah.
So now it's like, well, we don't want another shooting like that. It's like dude said in the manifesto, he could have had a knife. Like, when you walked in and he started killing people, did you not see how like all those people cowered in a corner? You could just run up and stab them.
Right, and that's the argument. That's the insanity of the gun control argument. You're turning over your safety to the police who took 36 minutes to get there, and they have no constitutional duty to show up if you call 911. One guy with a gun in that mosque, it's like the McDonald's in Alabama in December. Guy walked in ready to kill a bunch of people in a McDonald's in the evening. One guy pulled out a gun and shot him. One person died instead of 15.
I don't think they watched the video because he went in, mag dumped four mags. It was mag dump, you know, yeah. Ran out of bullets, went back to his car, opened up his trunk, chilled for a minute, talked to Facebook Live for a minute. Opened up his trunk, grabbed a shotgun, came back in, started double tapping people. It's like he had enough time.
I did not. I accidentally watched the video because some asshole posted it. I don't want to put that in my soul. I don't want to see it.
But it's important. I think it's important that people see it, because what this shows is like you can view the mind state of what's happening. You can view the deficiencies of what happened in society. You can view the problems that occur in society through that video. So like
you can view your own vulnerability if you're not armed and the ability. Yeah.
You can view multiple things that occur here. I mean, you can involve like, you know, people like, well, you know, good guy, even like the good guy can stop a bad guy. Like that didn't occur. There was a guy that tried to tackle him. You know what happened to the guy that tackled him?
He was mowed down. Yeah.
Five shots in the face.
Right.
I mean, that happens. They always get the goal. Oh, good will always win. And it's like, no, it doesn't. Yeah. It loses quite often.
Harry, final thoughts?
Oh, man, that's gruesome to think about. And that is...
Please follow that, yes.
Yeah, thank you, appreciate it. The one thing I will add to that is the one thing you can also put in your arsenal for these different types of stuff like that does happen is you'll probably get more use out of learning first aid, CPR, and your trauma supply kit than you will ever get out of your gun. Majority of the people will open up their first aid kit before they will ever have to open fire to defend themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So and that 36 minute, if the assailant was, you know, left or like was fleeing the area, if it still takes 36 minutes, you're going to bleed out. Even if you got two shots in, you're going to bleed out. So if more people are also trained in trauma and having those kits, possibly, you know, some people could have been still alive because they could have just got the emergency first aid and quick clot long enough to keep the, you know, get the goo in still inside of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The one thing that was always like sparked to me, maybe because I just watch way too much anime, is like the, I think at this point, I think we've hit the point where a lot of these mass shooters, which do happen more frequently outside the United States than we, you know, than the American audience want to give credit for. This happens in Canada. This happens in other places, not just the United States, is that, you know, it kind of feels almost like the, like almost like it's get almost to the verge of it's copycatting.
Yeah.
And building on each other. It is really is building on that, and it almost makes me reminisce about the copycats from the Laughing Man incident in Ghost in the Shell. I don't know if you ever remember the Ghost in the Shell, what is it, like first or second gig? When the Laughing Man incident, where all these people kept becoming Laughing Man, doing different things as the Laughing Man, as becoming copycats of the Laughing Man.
I'm sorry, I'm blowing on my cat to annoy her to get her to go away. I'm distracting here.
And with the manifesto, James is also correct there. They're doing everything they want, and they're blaming everything around from it.
Yeah,
and it's
all circular. It's not getting to the problem.
Yeah,
which is so multi-layered that you can't the mental health aspect, the aspect of just being one of these neats. Or an incel type guy who feels alienated from society, like the radicalization from the content that he's watching. Like there's 10, 15 different things, a chemical imbalance that we may not understand because we haven't done an autopsy yet. Like the amount of nuance and context and unexplainable that goes into an evil act like this doesn't, the system is not set up to handle it.
Right.
And so they jump to the most convenient, easiest thing.
Yeah.
I'll tell you some like really crazy stuff. So, like on the boards, like when he shot up the church, like the most savage comment I've ever seen on that thread was like, would like him more, but he shot up the wrong church. Basically implying he should have went to the synagogue to do it.
Oh. Yeah, that seems that's not savage. That's called, all right, maybe the New York
Times. That was kind of fucking sad. I'm like, holy shit. That's like, you know, I read that comment. And I was like,
maybe New York Times has a point.
So if you think about it, even like you want to blame it on white supremacists, but even white supremacists are throwing shade on this dude for not doing what they want him to
do. We had to start blocking people from our Instagram and Facebook because Stone messaged me, our social media manager, and goes, am I allowed to delete the people who comment that they support the shooter? And I said, absolutely block those people. Get rid of them. I don't want them anywhere. Yeah. I don't want to associate with them in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, don't even ask me that question next time. Just do it.
Yeah, just do it. Yeah. That's one thing I also like is that a lot of the news organizations are getting on the bandwagon of not saying the guy's name, not showing his face. You know, it's nice.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. But I'm done.
Yeah, if it was like last 2 years on this show, we had a co-host that would be all about that.
Yes, God works in mysterious ways and protects us in ways that we don't often see.
A certain guy from New York that used to hang around.
Yeah,
definitely.
So I think my final thought is think about the systems in which you're involved and behaviors in which you're involved. Like, just think about like the media. I haven't really been consuming a lot of media or social media the last 2 or 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
I've been so much more peaceful and so much less anxious and so much less angry because I'm not involved in a system that inherently is designed to inflame. Like CNN is meant to inflame you because they want your ratings. Like they can't help it. Oliver Darcy can't help but piss me off. Like he has to earn his paycheck.
Yes.
So, you know, and it doesn't help that he killed me in a fictional work. I should tweet at him. He's probably blocked me by now. But just like a system like that, or the system of, you know, how you fill your needs on a daily basis. Just think about, like, one of the reasons that I don't want to drink or lose my sobriety and be sober, because, like, I do go a little crazy because I think about everything. But that's part of what makes this show good, is that I'm constantly thinking about everything, you know, and I'm constantly thinking through the human experience and talking to people, and it causes me to question everything and question, like, why are we doing things this way? Like, it just makes you really have to question everything in your life, open it up for examination, and what is working? Why are you feeling alienated if you're feeling alienated? Why are you feeling lethargic? Are you depressed? Is it a chemical issue? Are you not working out? Are you, like, you just have to think through all these things. So challenge everything, including yourself, first and foremost. And with that, we say thank you for joining us here on We Are Libertarians. Thank you for joining us on this episode. We appreciate your attention. We appreciate you listening. We, meaning me, are always surprised that anyone is listening, especially at the amount of people that listen, and always appreciate when people write in and share something that they've learned or that they've grown from this show. You know, because I think we do something a little different, and it's more sociology than politics. Oftentimes, because we're trying to figure out how to live in a free world. And if we don't start getting it right by loving each other and loving ourselves even, and building our own lives in this time, in this moment, that when things do collapse, we will be ready to, people will see an example of self-sufficient people. If everything collapses today, do you think that we're going to just build a libertarian utopia? No, you have to set the example. And so we need to start now. And so that's a lot of what this show is about. All right, thanks for joining us, and we will see you next week.